improvise your despise. So, cause I saw common wrath that you didn't quite mask. I'm getting it clearly through all the been past. So mixed in with the signal you're sending. But who can unlearn all the facts that I've learned? I sat in the chairs and my senses burned. The torture of darkness connects on my tongue. Thoughts follow my vision and dance in the sun. All my grasp of district as they come slowly on the gun. If it's waiting till I'm old, can I live while I'm young? As it flutters away to where all this emotion is kept harmless and big. Not to educate somebody's back.
Hi everybody, we're live. Live from let's see, are we on? I think we're on. Okay.
Off to a smashing start.
Right. Hey everybody, we're live from California. In a hotel room.
We are
doing
live.
WWDC, like old school. When was the last time we did this in a hotel room? Was it like 2017 or something?
No, it was earlier than that, wasn't it? Because we did how many live shows did we do in San Francisco? We did one or two.
In person, we did two. No, we did one there, one at the Hammer Theater here.
No, because we did the one
at AltConf there.
Right, so that's three, right? Or is that one of the two?
I think it was just that one in San Francisco, and then we did the Hammer Theater here in San Jose. And then COVID happened and everything shut down.
Was that it? I feel like there was... I believe you. Yeah. I felt like there was more than that. So that would make it 18 and 19. So yeah, it's what you said, 2017.
Yeah. Wow. Anyway, good to be back, gentlemen.
We're here. We're looking at each other. It's a little creepy because we haven't done this in a long time.
We've got a table. We've never had a table before.
I know. That's true.
Listener ZM Knox in the chat says we did two of them at AltConf. I guess. I mean, we could have. It's been so long ago. I don't even know.
What are you going to do? But yeah, we're here. And we have a couple of hours to talk and we'll go until we drop dead. You know, all of us are still mostly on Eastern time. So we'll see how well this goes.
Why is Casey so much louder than me?
Because Casey just enunciates more than you.
I know, but you got to turn me up then.
All right, I got it. I'll turn Casey
especially
down.
Especially if you're going to use a live mix.
I mean, yeah.
Oh, yikes.
You're not going to be able to correct it. I'm going to shove this microphone into my face here.
Don't do that. No, I can just do it. I got you. Here. You're up to 50 decibels. That should be
I'm
plenty.
Old and tired. Once I start yelling, it'll probably be better.
Oh, my God.
That'll happen eventually.
Give it
I'm
going to
put locking wheel nuts on this podcast. You'll hear about it. I have a lot of high dynamic range, HDR. I'm at HDR. Casey has already gone through a compressor. Everything's the same.
Yeah.
My whispers are low, and my under the breath jokes are low, but then I get all excited and I'm loud. That's what you got to deal with.
We're off to a really
That's why people
start.
Like vinyl. That's why people like me.
Did you see my socks? Look at this. I know this is terrible audio content.
It's supposed to be records, but they're all warped because it's on a sock.
Wait, then it's even more fitting.
They all look like the real amoebas.
Oh, my God.
I apologize.
What we get from being in person. I know. To see Casey's socks. I have my shoes off, too. Margo?
Yeah, I'm just flat gray. Oh, you have the white.
I got a champion.
You have the boring champion white. I got the flat gray Adidas.
God, I got a gray toe. Really?
This is such a mess.
This is what the bootleg pays for. Sock comparisons.
So, if only you
could smell our feet. Are we,
yeah, right?
Yeah, we've been walking around in the California June heat all day.
Right.
I'm sure they smell fantastic.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Is this a show? Is this what people tune in
yeah.
for? Okay. I got to tell you, so we're at a circular table, right? The table is, I don't know, what you want, it's 3-4 feet across. So like a meter-ish for those of you who have other units. And I had set a capped water bottle on the table between my computer and John's. That water bottle was on the table for 3.5 seconds before John, which he's now doing again because I was demonstrating.
Demonstrate it. They can't see you. Just put
well, earlier today,
back on the ground.
Earlier today, we were sitting on the ground outside of the Steve Jobs Theater lobby trying to watch the State of the Union. And we were watching it, like, there were a big group of us around, and we were watching it on my laptop. I put my laptop on the ground and just had the screen going and the speakers up and everything. And Casey had placed a can of Diet Coke within a foot of my laptop.
Oh, easily 3 or 4 inches.
And I took a picture of it.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Because I thought, if this spills onto my laptop,
evidence,
I'm going to want to have this picture just in case.
Oh, no.
Fortunately, I'm very lucky that Casey, in fact, noticed this was a problem. Yep. And a few minutes later moved it himself. He moved it another foot away or so. So my laptop survived being near Casey Drink for a few minutes.
Yeah, because we would have had no recording today if that had happened. That would have been. And
there's no other computers in this room. You're right. It couldn't have happened.
I only have two ports. Sorry.
Is that a euphemism? I don't want to spoil anything, but suffice to say, we actually witnessed a computer murder that was not from the three of us earlier today.
I was thinking about I'm going to be kind and not shame that person on
this
podcast.
That's all I'm going to say. That's
until
all I'm going to say.
Until next week.
Right. But just suffice to say, if you're in the greater podcasting, you know, cinematic universe or whatever.
I feel bad that I cursed another person.
Yeah, yeah.
By commenting on some aspect of their life and then a very short time later having that aspect of their life cause a catastrophe.
Yeah, I suspect, listeners, you might want to listen to The Rebound.
Yeah, right.
Or maybe the Six Colors member special.
Indeed. Yeah. One of those might be a good choice. All right, we should probably get the show on the road. We have a lot to talk about.
We do.
So, John, the ruling is no follow-up, is
that
correct?
That's right, no time.
No time. So
he has spoken.
WWDC 2024. We are all here, as we've mentioned. I'm very excited for it. I think I'd mentioned on the show I was exceedingly anxious and nervous about travel, and I will just suffice to say there was no travel issues. Everything worked out. I'm a big baby, you know, same as it ever was. So we're all here. We're safe. We're sound. And we got to the Apple Park, you know, like entryway, and we went through, and it was all amazing. And, you know, John and I, our eyes are as big as saucers because, you know, we've never seen this before. John is now plucking a piece of dust off of my laptop.
You don't have to give a play-by-play of everything I'm doing. I'm just improving your life. So that I can't do remotely.
I've missed you guys so much.
Likewise. So we go, and we got to visit with some other press people, which was awesome. It was so lovely for me, at least. I presume it's the same for both you guys, but it was so lovely having that time where we were upstairs above where the actual event happens, and they served us like breakfast and whatnot. And we had some time to just visit with a lot of our peers and friends, and it was just very, very cool. And we had a couple hours of that. And then the show started with what I thought, and admittedly, I am so giddy about everything that's happening right now that I'm going to love everything. But I thought it was a hilarious video of Air Force One and Schiller and a bunch of the other presenters, you know, in a plane, skydiving out of the plane. I loved when Craig Federighi put the helmet on. That was his own, like, hair. The helmet was in the shape of his own hair. It made me laugh quite a bit. I loved the video.
I will say, like, first of all, it was amazing that, like, everyone else's hair was getting blown around except Craig's. Right? Because that's got to stay in place, right? I also, like, I loved having Schiller as the pilot.
Yep.
But he could not have looked less happy to be there.
Also true.
Well, he's like, supposed to look old and cranky.
Was that the idea?
He succeeded. I'm kind of surprised I didn't bleep him, because his line is, "I'm getting too old for this," and he said, "Stuff."
Yep.
It's an Apple video, yeah. But you know Phil didn't want to say that. They had him using a Clickwheel iPod, which
that was
nod to his,
his age.
He came up with the Clickwheel, you remember?
Oh, that was... Oh, I don't think I know
that
story.
It was at a meeting, yeah. Phil Schiller, but it's public knowledge, they said it somewhere, that it was his idea to have a rotating wheel on the iPod or whatever.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's his little feather in his cap, and he's the grizzled old veteran there.
I think this video, like, what I liked about it is that it didn't try to be, like, too corporate, too over the top, too high production. It was just, like, a relatively short, relatively light, cute video just about the event and a couple of fun execs, and then that was it. Like, there was no, like, major statement they're trying to make. They're not trying to be grand and show off how amazing everyone's lives are being saved by it. Like, mm-hmm. It was just a nice, simple, like, intro to a developer show. Like, that video could have been made 10 years ago, and we would have, well, everyone would have, you know, a little bit less gray hair, but not that I could be talking, but,
right.
Like, that, I feel like that was more of the spirit of the event than I think many of their more recent efforts with these, like, pre-produced fancy videos that have been very much like just really very overproduced, very like over polished, over corporate, over the top. I like this. This was a good fit for the event.
Yeah. One thing you missed out on if you weren't here live, like we were, is the like the 2 minutes when Tim Cook and Craig come out on stage, and you know, just for the live people, you don't see this in the movie. And Craig introduced it by saying, and you know, we have so much to announce today. We don't have time for one of our normal like videos where we have this all over. So it's no over the top video, no silly things or whatever. We're just going to get right to the facts. And I think that intro helped. Like the undercutting it helped to make that video land better, because I was thinking if I had seen this video at home without hearing Craig's intro, I'd be like, oh, another one of these Apple things where they pretend they're secret agents and do a thing. But because he undercut it so thoroughly and so well live, that when it started playing and it showed them jumping out of a plane, it's so clearly like ridiculous and self-deprecating. They're now parodying themselves. And that is a much better look than, let's say, crushing trombone in a hydraulic press.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it was huge dad energy, but here we are, three dads, so I loved it. But yeah, they went just broadly, and we'll obviously pick apart everything, but broadly, they went real fast, and it was apparent pretty quickly that they were moving with a quickness. And, you know, we were sitting next to each other, and I had Jason Snell to my right, and Jason pointed out to me, like, they're rounding out the main like stretch of content, and it was 11 o'clock Pacific or something like that.
Well,
so
they said that on the intro. They had the parachutes open, had the name of the OSs, and they said, we're going to do all of our OSs before we get onto the other stuff. They had something like that. Mm-hmm. And again, forgive people listening at home, like you may have had time to review the keynote video. We have not. We've been busy all day. But yeah, there was an interesting approach to just say, you know, the parachutes had the OSs, they're going to go through all the OSs, and they mentioned AI features, but they always said, like, machine learning. You made notes of it a couple of times.
Yep.
They would say, oh, there's a machine learning feature, this, that, but, you know, anyway, we'll get to the big AI stuff at the end, but they wanted to get their OSs out of the way, but there was so much content. Like, Casey was trying to take notes on it, and I was trying to help, and it was going so fast, we couldn't keep up with typing.
Yeah, it was incredible. So, moving through. Oh, do we want to do like an overview up front, or we just want to plow through?
Okay, keynote order. Okay. Vision OS.
All right. So, well, excuse me, Apple TV Plus. Hello.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. I took a break during the TV Plus promo to write an email. I had to send this email to him this morning. I'm like, this seems like a good time.
I'm excited about those shows, but I kind of don't want to be spoiled on them. You don't, like, I'm going to watch the new season of Severance and Silo no matter what you show me. So I was kind of trying to avert my eyes, but yeah, that was there.
It was a thing. It was apparently 5th anniversary of Apple TV Plus. So there was that.
Honestly, I mean, look, TV Plus, I think it has turned out pretty well. It's a great service. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great content on there, and it got exactly as much time during a developer keynote as it should have.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty good.
I would argue the time might be zero, but...
Yeah.
Although, I will say, so a little inside baseball, and I can't resist because it's my first time. It was deafeningly loud.
Too loud
during the like big cut sequences.
We should use Margo's concert headphones.
That's true. I didn't even think about it.
Why did we do that?
I didn't even think about it. It's so true. But oh my word, it was so loud during anything that was like not just somebody talking at you. It was astonishingly loud.
It was very clear, though. I have to say,
it was
so clear that like because actual live Tim Cook comes out on stage and talks into a microphone, and then recorded Tim Cook came, and they sounded exactly the same.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
A good sound system.
So anyway, so Vision OS, like Marco had said a moment ago. So Mike Rockwell comes out, 1.5 million compatible apps. I think it was Ben McCarthy had sent me a screenshot of what appeared to be a little baby call sheet icon somewhere in the mass of icons.
I was looking for it. It was hard.
I was looking for it. I couldn't tell. Yeah. But we were seated relatively far away from the screen, which that sounds like a complaint. It actually wasn't. It was chosen deliberately.
We wanted to be in the shade.
Because we wanted to be in the shade. And so we were seated fairly far back, and I tried to look. And I haven't had the chance to go back, like one of you just said, to look at the video and see it. But that would be my first keynote appearance if that's what happened. So that's extremely exciting.
But anyway. I guess the ATP podcast was in a session,
not in the keynote. So anyway, so 1.5 million compatible apps, and then we had Haley Allen come out to talk about just Vision OS improvements. I'm trying to just skip over the stuff that's not that exciting. Go to the stuff that I find exciting. First of all, iOS. Oh, stop. Well played, but still. So converting 2D images into 3D using quote advanced machine learning.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was very cool.
Yeah, we'll see how it works.
We'll see how it works. It may be garbage. It may be great.
I mean, it's just got to be the subject detection, right?
That's what we already have.
And trying to figure out, like, you know, how much depth certain subjects would naturally have, and maybe what the side of their head might slightly look like.
Right.
I mean, they aren't the first people to try to do this. It's going to be a little weird. I'm sure it will be fine.
Yeah.
If they do it with great subtlety, it should be fine in most cases.
Yeah, like Facebook, I think. I've never actually used like this feature, but I believe it has something where you can take a 2D video and it'll do like a parallax effect between the foreground and the background. I presume, to y'all's point, that it's something like that. They did mention, and I forget exactly how they were describing it, but the gist of it was... It's very annoying sometimes to try to figure out the battery level and the time on Vision OS. What you're supposed to do today is you look up, and there's like a little gray circle with a down chevron, and then you do a pinch gesture, and that'll drop down like control center or whatever. And they said that what you can do is you can flip your hand so your palm up, and that'll it'll detect that and show like time and battery, and then you can flip your hand over for control center, which if that works well, I think that'll be really neat.
Right. And nice the home gesture too. Like that was the big thing. Like, because right now to go home, you have to reach your hand up to the up to the physical digital crown on the headset and push it. Hmm. And then with this, now that you can just have your hand palm up and squeeze together, I think, or something.
Think that's
and
right.
There's some kind of gesture as the home button, which that's a good improvement. You know, Vision OS, the more you can avoid constant hand motion, you know, the less fatiguing it will be over time.
For all the control center thing, like they put it up high, like it's a balance. They don't want it to be in your eye line, so you accidentally trigger it. But then they don't want it to be too high, so it's annoying. But it is like it's kind of important for it to be out of the way, and that's why I think it's annoying to go, because the people, you don't look up that. Right. With your eye, especially with your eyeballs, because you can't just look up with your head. Well, I guess you can, but it's just...
No, if you look up with your head, you still got to look up with your eyes. Yeah. It's weird.
It's intentionally inaccessible, and the hand gestures seem great. Although I do wonder if they're kind of like how you burn, like, you know, command click or whatever in an app. Like, how many hand gestures are they going to have us doing? By year five of this thing, we're making the spells from the what?
I was
going to
say,
right?
I was going to say the same thing. It's so true. So, all right. So, in the interest of moving along quickly, Mac Virtual Display getting some big updates later this year, which I am genuinely super excited about. I'm not using my Vision Pro that frequently, although I did on the plane on the way here, and it was wonderful. But one of the things I do love about it is Mac Virtual Display. And they're saying that. Again, it was going so fast. I might be flubbing the details, and that's true of basically everything we're about to talk about for the next hour and a half. But they said it was a much higher display resolution and size. And they said something along the lines of it's the equivalent of two 4K screens.
Correct.
But the way it was presented was like one just obscene ultra wide, like
curved thing. It's like those PC ultra wide monitors, but a virtual version.
Yeah, it's basically like, you know, 8K by, you know, 2K or whatever.
Right. And what was interesting about this was they made brief mention that. What's happening here to make this work and look okay is that they're doing the dynamic foveation stuff that that they do for the entire OS, for Vision OS, that is, but they're doing it for Mac Virtual Display on the Mac. So yes. I guess they're live transmitting where your eyes are looking so that the Mac will render appropriately.
I think they're doing that for bandwidth reasons, because then they don't have to send the full resolution display to the headset. They can send a crappier version, but with a higher res of where you're looking, which allows them to, I don't know what the limitation is. Is it a video memory or something, or whatever the M2's limits are? But it's clear that if they could have just said, okay, we'll just, you got a bigger screen now and just not deal with this, they would have done it. But this is more complicated. So
Yeah, very much so. And then it was funny. I have not looked at Mastodon all day, but I did see a handful of people send me a text as soon as they mentioned that train support is now support or will be supported in travel mode. I it's hilarious to me that an American of all people is the one who is known for using the Vision Pro on the train. But here I am.
I mean, only Americans can buy it.
That's,
so far.
I guess that's true. That's a good point. All right. I take it all back.
Although soon they'll be opening in other countries.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
We'll see.
I mean, yeah. And so actually we can jump right over there. I mean, it's just very quickly, there's apparently going to be a physical lens for certain Canon cameras. I don't know, Marco, if you call it which models it was.
Yeah, for the EOS R7. Canon has this whole new line of the mirrorless cameras that replace other big ones. The R7 is, you know, one of the big, great ones. And there's a new Canon spatial lens that will allow native spatial video capture. They say Final Cut Pro for Mac can edit it. They said specifically for Mac, so I guess too bad for the iPad people. And it's viewable in the new Vimeo app for Vision OS, which is interesting. And then they also announced some deals, integration with Blackmagic and DaVinci Resolve for Apple Immersive Video. That's the 180-degree field of view with the 8K res for production of that. So they're basically, and then they said there's new Apple Immersive Video content on the way. And
yes.
So we will very slowly have new stuff coming to the Vision Pro. Great. I mean,
hooray.
And what's interesting, too, is like almost everything else we're going to talk about, they were very clear. They kept saying that, you know, all these like new AI features and everything are coming to, quote, a Mac, iPhone, and iPad.
Yeah.
It was very clear none of this stuff is coming to Vision OS, at least not yet. And the only reason I could think, like, it has the hardware. It has an M2. And that's, you know, it goes down to M1 iPads and Macs. So we know it's like, you know, the hardware is compatible. So I guess the only reason is like they just haven't gotten to it yet.
I think those code bases are just too far diverged. Like if you think about Photos and Vision OS, that's not a shared code base with the other platforms.
Well, but why not? When they made it, they knew they were going to have to unify
it. It's shared-ish, but it's, you know, they were so isolated for so long that there's enough of a divergence and they have to work on their 2.0 features that I kind of understand why they didn't get. I'm assuming they will eventually as they converge further, but right now it kind of makes sense to me.
I think... The Vision Pro user base, such as it is, probably really needs to see like signs of support from Apple. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they really got a lot of that today. I think they got a small amount of support, but all the cool features that they demoed for everything else, all their other platforms really, or all their other major platforms, they like none of it's available for Vision OS. And I think that's kind of a weird miss at this point.
Well, the rumor was that Craig Federighi got religion about ChatGPT in 2022. So that gave all the other platforms 2 years to be figuring out how they're going to integrate this. And Vision Pro hadn't even shipped at that point. It's only been out for whatever, 4 or 6 months. Like they're just behind. It's kind of a shame because they really want to promote this. I knew that Vision Pro, I had it as the very first item in the schedule. I didn't predict Apple TV Plus would be in there. You know they want to talk about it because it's their latest platform, but to your point, Marco, they had the least to say about it. It's not in on this party, kind of like me with my Intel Mac.
Yeah. Very briefly, I wonder if, because obviously an M2 is, on the surface, it supports all this new Apple Intelligence stuff, which we'll talk about later, but I can't help but wonder, it seems like the Vision Pro is running at the edge of what the M2 is capable of, just doing normal Vision Pro stuff. I almost wonder if there just wasn't enough, not literal bandwidth, but figurative bandwidth to like layer all this other junk.
It's got the R1 doing a lot of stuff there.
Oh, that's true. That's a good point.
Yeah. And the M2, the M2 is very strong. Like I don't think that's the problem. I think it's just about like they just didn't have the time or the software resources. I don't know, whatever it was.
Half the apps that the AI stuff integrates with weren't even native in Vision 1.0. So
maybe we'll get it then.
Yeah, we'll see.
It should make it easier, actually. Here, run the iPad version.
So anyway, to wrap up Vision Pro, I tried to copy down the countries and when, and I failed miserably, so I don't have details. But suffice to say, there's a handful of countries sometime in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, June 28th was China, Japan, and Singapore. Yeah, and then July 12th was Australia, Canada, France, Germany. And then there was one other one that I went by too fast for me to write down.
Exactly. this to me was a B, it was good. There was nothing that really wowed me. There's nothing that made me think, oh, thank God, this is going to change.
And you think, again, we're talking about this the day of. There's got to be more. It just didn't fit into the keynote. Once people install these betas in future episodes, we'll talk about how you can rearrange icons in the home screen or something. They just didn't make the keynote or whatever.
Yeah, but this was acceptable. Like, I wasn't overly jazzed about this. I mean, I am pretty jazzed about Mac Virtual Display, to be honest with you, but it didn't seem to take away any of the problems that people are having with Vision OS in terms of how difficult it is for like text entry, for example. So we'll see what happens, but
if you didn't like Vision OS before, you still won't like it. If you liked it before, you have a few improvements, some of which might mean a lot to you, most of which probably won't.
Yeah, exactly right.
All right, before we do iOS.
Oh, yes.
We are sponsored this episode. We're doing this live by Trade Coffee. Trade Coffee is a specialty coffee marketplace that matches customers with the best coffees from local roasters around the country. You just take a short quiz to share your preferences, and Trade matches you to personalized recommendations. It's a convenient way to experience small batch specialty coffees and support small businesses. This coffee is roasted to order and ships to you within 48 hours. I have personally used Trade for a long time, and I love the variety of beans that they send, and they're so good. There's from all these roasters all across the country. You just tell them what you want in basic terms, like, hey, give me whole bean coffee, give me a pound every 2 weeks, or whatever your terms are. They can accommodate what you want. They have different grinds, different light roast, dark roast, whether you're going to be brewing it hot or cold, or espresso, they can optimize it for that. Trade just has it all. Coffee from Trade also makes a great gift. You cannot go wrong with giving someone the gift of great coffee. To me, the greatest secret of Trade is you just get fresh roasted beans. That is the best way to make fresh coffee at home. It's fresh roasted beans. It matters so much more than you think, way more than how you're brewing them, way more than whether they're from some mountain or any detail you could possibly think. The fresh roasted is key, and Trade has things roasted to order and shipped right to you so fast that it's always fresh. So it is a great service. Check it out today. Give Trade a try this summer. Right now, they're offering 30% off your first order when you visit drinktrade.com /ATP. That's drinktrade.com/ATP for 30% off your subscription order. drinktrade.com/ATP. Thank you so much to Trade Coffee for sponsoring our show.
iOS 18, baby. So do we want to have a sidebar about the Gurman rumor thing, or do we want to just put that aside?
I'll tell you what. So I'm obviously leading up. Gurman always has lots of rumors.
Right.
There was he basically had a ton of info right beforehand. I didn't even look at it because I was at this point, we were so close. I think I was already on the plane when it came out, and I'm like, I don't even want to be spoiled at this point. I'm close enough now. I'm in the mode. I'm in the very theatrical. I want to see the performance. So, whatever he got. I've since heard afterwards, he has very impressive sourcing. Obviously, he really is dominating the entire rumor game almost entirely by himself. I am glad that he provides us content throughout the year to talk about. But when it comes down to 2 days beforehand dumping an entire presentation, I don't find a lot of value in that, to be honest.
Yeah.
I recognize I'm not. This is not the universal opinion of everybody who ever reads news sites, and we've certainly been guilty of seeing these things ourselves and having fun with them sometimes, but. There's a certain limit on how much I want things to be spoiled. Yeah. And that seemed like it was past it for me.
Yeah. And that's fair. So a lot of this we already knew if we had read the Mark Gurman report, but starts with the home screen. You can rearrange icons on Springboard. So they had a picture of a dog, if I recall correctly. The dog's head is in the upper left-hand corner of the home screen. The dog was the background of the home screen or what have you. Dog's head is in the upper left. So Craig arranges, icons. I think maybe there was a top row laterally, and then there was a bunch of icons on the right-hand side and some icons on the bottom. And it seemed like it was relatively easy. Whatever the new jiggle mode is, it seemed that whatever he did it quickly. And I don't think it was a sequences shortened sort of situation.
Well, although he didn't show how he picked up a bunch of app icons somehow. Mm. And then he just showed him dropping a group of them.
Well, the normal way where you drag one and then you tap a bunch of other ones and they join the group, right?
He probably should have shown that just because most people don't even know you can do that.
Yeah, it's kind of complicated. So we talk about the difficulty of rearranging icons in the home screen. And obviously people do want to leave spaces and they've been using spacer icons and this helps them from that. But if you can clear space on any of your screens, this should make it slightly easier to rearrange, because one of the most annoying things is how they... Whatever you do, it wants to fill the hole. It'll pull one from the previous screen, and they all just want to, they just want to compress into this big, you can't leave holes. You can't, if you know you're going to put something in a spot, there's no way to leave that spot open, and that makes it so difficult. And that's why, when you remove an icon, everything shuffles up, and then one from the previous screen goes and shuffles in. I hope that the way they've done it has made the icons less obsessed with being right next to each other, where you can actually make holes, because that's the point of this feature. And I know people want this, so, good job in iOS 18, the 18th version of the phone operating system, by allowing people to do something that they've been doing for years and years using blank icons.
Indeed. So they also announced that icons will darken in dark mode. And the implication, and from what little I've gleaned since the keynote, is that this does not require developer input, although I think we've since learned that you can provide alternative versions of your icon. And then additionally, you can customize all of your icons collectively in one shot with a tint color. And again, now I'm not so clear what developer input is required for that, or do they do it all magically? I think we had seen a screenshot that one of our friends had taken of their home screen and with a red tint, and that was with today's icon. So that makes me think you don't have to opt into it as a developer.
That's right. Yeah, it seems like you can opt in as a developer,
right,
and provide them with separate icon assets that are maybe more optimized for it. But even if you don't, they will still do it anyway. Which I think this is what we were saying the other week, that we were saying wow, it kind of seems like that would be a bit risky with big brand recognition and things, but they did it anyway. And so I think it's a great move for users.
Do we know if it's every home screen when you pick this color, or is it per home screen?
Because
I'd originally thought when this rumor, I thought it was per icon, but that seems to be not the case, right? They only showed whole home screens of all the icons are red tinted.
As far as I know, it's the entire screen.
But is it per, if I go to a different page, we'll find out. But it's interesting. And the way they look like they're doing it, I don't know if this is how they're doing it, but it looks as if they turn all the icons black and white, and then all the things that were whitish become pinkish, become greenish, whatever. That's what it looks like if you don't have any sort of customization. That's how it tints your icons. And that's not going to look great in some cases. And, you know, it's like my main objection to this feature is that I just don't think it will be attractive. Like, I think people should be able to change their icons to whatever they want. And they can with the stupid shortcut thing, which is annoying. Just, you know, make whatever icon you want. Make a shortcut. You can pick any icon you want. It would be nice if you could sort of just hold on an icon and say, I want to change this icon and here's what I want to change it to. But that's not really this feature. It's tinting, it's developer support for, you know, custom icons for dark mode, and it's so you can give your home screens a theme. And they and it will pick the theme based on your background. If your background is yellowish, it will make all your icons yellowish and so on. So I you know, and apparently there's an Android feature that is very, very similar to this, so it makes sense that they pulled this out because it's a kind of like a switching feature. Like, people on Android are used to being able to do this. Now they can do it on iOS too.
Yeah, and I think they did this in a very Apple way of, like, you know, there's this whole industry out there of these apps that let people customize their home screens, and they do it through, as we mentioned, you know, all these ridiculous hacks to get that, to be able to do per icon customization and, you know, to arbitrary icons. You know, you can have all these apps that will help you install a really aesthetic theme for your home screen, and you can have this, and it'll show you hundreds of things. You can buy packs of them and everything, and they work through all these, you know, terrible means. What Apple did here is not remove the need for all those apps and not remove their market at all. What they did here was give you, like, the 20% solution. It's like, here, if you want to customize your home screen, okay, we'll give you this very limited, like, guardrailed, safe way to do it, and we'll give you these, you know, these 10 options that you can pick or whatever. Although, actually, the freeform color picker was nice. But, like, you know, we're going to give you these very limited controls. You can do a small subset of customization. It's still very gated, very limited, very safe. But we will let you do this. And so that's going to be great. A lot of people are going to do that. And at the same time, it's not going to at all affect the market for the apps that go way further than that.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens with it. But I'm excited because it seems like there's a need for this or want for this, if nothing else. And now Apple's satisfying it.
You going to make your whole home screen yellow?
No, I'm not. but it would match your car if I did. Control Center. So you're going to be able to swipe vertically between different pages. And what I thought was most interesting is that, and this was the beginning of, I feel like we heard a lot about the Intense API and several places that it becomes important. And I think, Marco, you had said over yep. the last few weeks or months that you saw this, you know, this the tea leaves pointing this way. And it sure seems like you were dead right. So anyways, third parties can donate controls to Control Center, which is really, really fun. So the canonical example that they used was like, hey, if you have a Ford and you can unlock your Ford remotely, well, if the Ford app supports it, you can have a Control Center icon that is unlock my car. And then they additionally said that lock screen controls are now going to be swipeable, and which I think is very interesting and exciting. And although I don't remember if it was mentioned here, while I'm thinking of it, another thing that they mentioned at some point today was that third-party camera apps, there will be an API to have a third-party camera app work mm-hmm. while the phone is locked.
Correct.
And that is tremendous news for my dear friend Ben McCarthy and, you know, a lot of other people who have third-party camera apps, because that is a real stumbling point, because the fastest way to use when you're trying to take a photo, you want to do it immediately, right? And you don't want to unlock your phone and blah, blah, blah. So that's really exciting as well.
Yeah, this now gives people the full capability to have third-party camera apps that replace the camera button on the lock screen and work while the camera is still locked.
Right.
That's all very new. And that's, yeah, for third-party camera apps, that's huge.
And presumably also the swipe gesture on the lock screen. If you don't want to hold down on the camera icon, you can just swipe sideways. That will also be configurable.
Really? Do we know?
I don't. It would be really weird if you held down on the icon and got one camera app and swiped and got a different one.
That's true. Yeah,
but we'll see.
Yeah. We will see what happens.
But and Control Center integration too. Like, and the way this works, this is all built on widgets. Like this, we've been seeing the building blocks here for a while. The modern widget system powers so many things all across the system. And so, as far as we can tell, I haven't dove too far into it yet. But as far as we can tell, all of this Control Center stuff is all just basically widgets in a new place. It does inherit the same seeming limitations of widgets. Hopefully we'll have some follow-up next week with details of this, but it does seem like when you, if you have, say, you know, an app running a thing in Control Center with one of these new you know, blocks in Control Center, that the app is not constantly running in the background. So it might be hard to do things like make a Rich Now Playing widget for audio apps, nice. For instance. It's very similar to other widgets, seemingly, in that it supports things like buttons and toggles that kind of wake the app up when they are hit and then go back and then make the app go back to sleep. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a little bit limited, but I'm really glad they're doing this. And what's interesting, though, is like that kind of, to some degree, might replace widgets on, like, because you can currently pull down like the widget screen, or you can swipe over to the widget page. Mm-hmm. Like, there are certain places, like, you can kind of now have widgets in like three different directions of swiping mm-hmm. on the phone. It's, I think it might get a little confusing as to like where you're going to put certain things, or like end up on the wrong page. I don't know, but I'm glad to have this, you know, even if it's maybe getting a little bit busy.
Yeah. They talked about privacy for a while. They said that one of the things you might want to do is put face or touch ID or a passcode in front of apps. So you can only open, you know, the Photos app, for example, if you, you know, authenticate. They also said you can hide an app entirely. I missed how you would access it. Maybe you're searching for it.
So
I'm not sure.
It shows up in the app library.
Okay.
And there's like a special hidden apps block on the bottom of the app library. And it didn't show it in a locked state. But we assume you Face ID probably to unlock that block, and then you can access the app.
That's like deleted photos in the photos.
Yeah, like and hidden photos, the hidden album. It makes all these things work like the hidden album, it looks like.
It's kind of weird I guess it's two things, right? So one is protecting an app, and you could do that individually to apps, and you're like, great, the feature's done. And the other is hiding the fact that app is on your phone at all. Because the apps that you tap and they Face ID, you can still see the icon to the app. And you're right, they didn't show it in the presentation, but I assume the hidden apps app library folder doesn't even show you which apps are in it when it's in the lock state.
I would hope not.
Right. And so that's why there's both of these features. It's not just like, oh, if you don't want to individually lock apps, you can just drag them into this folder and they're all locked. No, it's to hide the fact that the app is on your phone at all.
Yep. They also said, and this is a long time coming, but I'm very happy for it, you can restrict what contacts are being exposed to apps. So there was a big brouhaha a few years ago where we realized, I don't remember what app, it doesn't matter, but like there was some app that wanted to slurp up all your contacts.
Was it Path?
I wanted to say that, but I think it was Afterpath. Mm. But you very well could be right. It doesn't really matter. One way or another, it slurped up all your contacts, which could have been for reasonable reasons, but ultimately what it ended up doing was like spamming all your contacts and saying, oh, you should join Path or whatever it was. And that was really gross. And ever since then, I, at least, and I think many others, have been really reluctant to let an app, you know, slurp up all your contacts, which I think is good to be reluctant about it. Now, apparently there's going to be some sort of API where you can say, I guess, again, in the vein of photos, you know, what contacts would you like to expose to such and such an app, which is great. I'm here for it.
Yeah, because before there used to be no API at all to contact access. It was just a public open API, and that I think that's when a lot of these apps were really abusing it. And so this it's great to see this, because there are so many apps where, like, in order to do some critical functionality, it requests access to your entire address book. Yeah. Sometimes it actually requires it in ways that I think are not actually necessary, and that app review should take a look at, like WhatsApp, for instance. Small app, no one's really heard of it. It's nice to see Apple putting a little more attention on contact privacy.
Yeah, it's kind of, I see that in some apps, and sometimes I can see, like, you want to be able, like, say it's an app where you're going to have to type people's email addresses or contact information. You want it to auto-complete it, right? I understand, I want this app to build up a database of all the contacts so I can auto-complete. But you don't want the app to actually have all your contact info. I wonder if there's some privacy preserving way that they could, like, vend a contact autocomplete typing. I don't know. It's a complicated problem.
Oh, they easily could for like the system text inputs. But I think the reality is, in the app landscape we live in, no app would ever use that. They would just request access to your entire contact book
keep nagging you about it every time you launch the app. You sure you don't want to give me access to all your contacts? Are you sure?
Yeah, and they would gate some critical functionality behind it, and app review wouldn't have a problem with it.
Yeah,
should, but they won't.
Right. All right. So we talk about messages. Tap backs can be any emoji. Which,
finally.
I'm very excited about this. Truly, I am. I'm a little worried. I don't think they did a great job of showing what the user interface is going to look like. So I'm a little nervous. It's going to be super clunky. I'm going on faith that it won't be. But assuming it's not clunky, I'm here for it. Very excited.
Yeah, that's a good point, because the one good thing about the limited set is you don't have to go through like a giant picker. You know, their emoji picker has gotten better, but it's still sometimes cumbersome.
Yeah. And I mean, really, and one thing I also loved, obviously, yeah, finally the emoji. Everyone's been wanting that for how many years now? And every other chat app does it, and it's great. And, you know, Slack, WhatsApp, like every other, there's so many other apps people are using that just have free form emoji responsive things. It has become a language that people expect to have that. Mm-hmm. So that's good. I also love that they did bold italic underline strike through.
Yep.
And then they have send later, which is interesting. They use the example of, like, if you want to, like, send somebody a happy birthday message in the morning, you know, you can schedule it at night and it'll go that morning.
You can just have AI send it for them. You don't need to send it yourself.
Right. You're getting ahead, man. You're getting ahead.
Well, then you can have their AI read all their birthday messages and just summarize
and say,
it for you.
Yeah.
Easy. All right. Let's stay positive. there's also text formatting. Oh, I'm sorry. You said text formatting. It's the text effects. There's magnification, animation, a blow away. We couldn't have a keynote without blow away reference some way, somehow. Again, this sounds cool and interesting. I'm a little worried and skeptical about the interface in order to do it, because, like, text selection on iOS, not fun, which I don't know how it could be fun without a full physical keyboard. So I'm not, like, faulting them for that. But I don't know. This seems like it might be more effort than it's worth. Something that I thought was very, very interesting, particularly sitting directly in front of Underscore, actually, was messages via satellite. So to back up a half step, you can send emergency messages via satellite. Like, you can, there's a wizard you would walk through that says, "Why, you know, are you hurt? Are you stranded? Whatever. You know, are you safe?" Et cetera, et cetera. And it would basically write a message, not in an AI. Highway, just like, you know, so Casey is hurt on the side of the road and he's at such and such Latin long, go help him.
More of a Mad Libs way.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. That's a very good way of putting it. Well, now you can do full honest to goodness messages. Like, you type your message and send it via satellite, which I think is great.
Yeah, it's core messages or core features of iMessage via satellite.
Yeah, that's so true, because it was like tapbacks as well,
wasn't it? So now, you know, since the iPhone 14, you've been able to do those emergency messages, but it was like emergency only. Now, when you are connected only via satellite, you can text seemingly anybody. They have SMS support. And then for iMessage, they said key iMessage features, whatever that means, but they said it includes sending and receiving messages, emoji, and tapbacks. Yeah. So, like, that's, you know, so obviously, so probably not like photos and stuff, obviously, but that's pretty cool. Like, it's basically like free unlimited satellite texting with
free,
any
though?
iPhone.
They didn't mention any money, but I do.
I mean, well, all they said was works with iPhone 14 or later.
I mean, I take your point. I think they're just kicking that can down the road until they figure out what they're going to do about charging for this. But
it's got to be free. Well, maybe they would do emergency for free.
That's a good point.
And then this new feature maybe would be part of some plus plan.
They didn't say anything about it in the keynote, which is weird.
I know.
What are you going to do? Mails getting on-device categorization. So this is where you filter in. The Gmail's had this for how many years, John?
Yeah, like, but I do not use it in Gmail. But some people like it.
I mean, in the times I used it, actually, Hey, when Hey was new and exciting, like, yeah, a lot of people
had
really
its own little cute categorization.
Right, like, exactly.
The key feature of this categorization thing is, what are the categories? And it's not like the user can pick them. It's basically the person who makes the app has to decide what are the categories of email that people get that they think would be useful to junk put into bins, and then they have whatever machine learning thing puts them into these bins. So here are the bins that Apple chose.
I mean, there's no reason that has to be fixed. Like, Apple has, I think, chosen to make it fixed, but you could do things like make a tagging system and then have the system automatically file into those tags. I don't know if they're going to ever
do that. I don't mean just the word. I mean, like, the analysis of the message to say what kind of message in it. So Apple's things are what? Primary transactions, updates, and promotions? Is that all?
Something like that. Promotions was a great euphemism for that.
Well, I mean, everyone has some promotions. It's stuff that's not spam or whatever. But, like, transactions make some sense. People want to have receipts. Primary is, like, the catch-all for the important messages. And then updates is newsletters and social media. I don't know. I always find it, like, I find it more work for me to think about what bucket this thing would be in. Even though in Gmail, like, Gmail's buckets, it can be in all the buckets at the same time, because they're not folders. Like, it's tagging system, right? But I think this... A lot of people feel like they don't have any tools to manage their email, even when they do, because the tools are complicated or require setup that nerds will do, but people won't. They just go to their inbox and they just flail and they leave, right? And this, at least, like, this will, first, it's going to annoy people because it'll be like, where's my email? It's in these categories. I don't care about it. But as long as it can be disabled, that's fine. And for the people who do find this useful, they'll be like, oh, now something else is organizing my email for me, and they will learn where to look for certain things. Gmail does it. A lot of other email clients do it. Obviously, people find it useful. This is an Apple catch-up feature. I think it's important for them to have this. I just hope they allow... Because I'm thinking people in my life, if they install this operating system and they say, where did all my email go? I don't know what primary is. That's a bad sign, but we'll see how it goes.
Yep. I'm also curious. They had the digest view per sender, and it seems like it was like they had like custom header images for companies.
Yeah.
That, yeah. I don't know how that, like, are they defining some new standard of, like, if, you know.
They're just extracting it from the emails.
I don't know. Yeah, that seemed a little gross to me, but I don't know. It's pretty harmless.
I wonder if all this stuff will work on Apple's emails. Are they going to put all their own stuff into primary when they tell us about the latest sale on MacBook Pros or the WWDC developer emails?
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But I do think the digest view, like the example they used was, here's all the emails about, like, an upcoming set of flights, for example. And I mean, I'm here for that. So I was very happy for Underscore when we saw messages via satellite. And then I got very sad for Underscore because then just a moment later, they decided to announce new topographic maps. In maps, you can access them offline. There's turn-by-turn voice guidance. I think they specifically were talking about for hikes.
Yep, they were. Mm-hmm. Yep. This was literally the only new features for maps this year were
targeted Underscore.
Yeah, right? Yep. It was just targeting Pedometer Plus Plus.
He because Underscore is the nicest human that's ever lived, he was so positive and so upbeat about it. But my heart breaks for poor
Underscore. And there are other hiking apps. We just happen to know someone who makes one of them. And to be clear, this is exactly, you would expect Apple to add this feature. It is a logical feature to add to Maps. They should add it. Third parties have been filling this gap. Now Apple is stepping up. And I think Underscore is right that Apple's going to do what they do, but third parties are able to do more sophisticated, complicated things with different decisions. So it's not like when Apple enters one of these areas, it makes it impossible. Like, Apple made a podcast app and Overcast still exists, right?
So actually existed first.
Yeah, it is a dynamic that as a developer for any platform, you should become accustomed to, and don't be afraid that it's going to destroy your app, because, you know, if your app was successful at all, there's room to make something different than what Apple does, and Apple almost will never do what a third party would want to do with a given app.
Well, in all fairness, though, you know, when Apple really does damage by a Sherlocking, it's usually because they do something in a way that someone else can't match, like using some kind of system integration or APIs that we aren't allowed to use or business terms that we aren't allowed to use, 30%. You know, shenanigans, like that's what usually really kills something else.
Or they massively subsidize it, because obviously Apple can make apps that are subsidized by their bazillions of dollars from their other businesses, and they can put you out of business, but they tend not to do that. Like, they have surprisingly small teams on many of their apps, but the real thing that keeps it back is because Apple is never going to add really complicated, sophisticated features. They're just allergic to it, right?
Yeah.
And so, if, you know, whatever obscure feature that you think hikers want, Apple's probably never going to get around to that. They're just going to give, like, the thing that works for 90% of hikers, and that 10% would still be using your app. So you just have to make sure your app, I mean, it probably already does something opinionated, specific, that is too nitty-gritty for Apple to ever add, because they have to make something that works for most people, and you can make something that works for, like, the hiking enthusiasts.
By the way, real-time follow-up, apparently the standard exists for email corporate logo headers. It's called BIMI or BIMI, and apparently it's not very good. But that is a public standard, so please don't email us. Thank you.
Wow. Today I learned.
It must be used so broadly. Somehow we missed it.
Wallet gets tap to Apple Pay Cash. So what the theory is, you know, let's say you want to pay somebody for something, but you don't necessarily want to give out your phone number or your email address, what have you, then you can just tap your phones like you can to exchange stuff via AirDrop. So that's pretty cool.
That's super cool. It's like, not just do you not have to share it with them, even with people who I don't care about sharing it. Like, I'll totally give you my... You have to do the thing of, like, what's your iMessage? That's why Venmo and stuff have the little QR codes for you to scan.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
They just, the hassle of having to type something in or whatever. And so this has it's a double whammy. You don't have to type anything in, and presumably it's privacy preserving, where you literally don't need to give it to them.
Yeah. Yep. You can use Apple Pay online. I guess it's Apple Pay Cash online. Is that what they
are? I missed that part of the... Yeah.
There were some kind of, like, enhancements to what you can do with Apple Pay checkout online. And it was various, like, financial, you know, little tricks that we don't really care about.
Yeah, and this is another example of them flying by. But they made mention of something about in the wallet app. So if you have, like, a concert ticket, there would be an event guide for that particular venue, which in theory sounds really great. They talked about Journal app. Honestly, I don't really care. We should probably move on.
They added search, which it somehow magically did not have, like, amazingly. Now it has it. You can log your state of mind also, which I think I'm kind of surprised it wasn't there at first. But it's good to see them, you know, doing something to the Journal app. Like, this is a brand new app that launched in a very minimal state. I didn't have a chance. I didn't see yet, though. Were there any changes to Journal APIs? Like, was there any way for instance, other third-party apps to vend activities to suggest for Journal to use?
They didn't mention it in the keynote, but that doesn't mean it's not there. We'll find out.
Yeah,
indeed. Then there's game mode in iPhone. So that's, you know, basically cranking everything else back so that the game process is the priority. Photos gets its biggest redesign ever. It's got a two-pane design, which I didn't think aesthetically looked great, but I can understand how they landed there because it seems like functionally it'll be an improvement. There's filters. So one of the examples they enumerated was filtering out screenshots, which is pretty cool. Granted, I was sitting with a bunch of journalists, so they were very excited about that.
Yeah, if you don't have a lot of screenshots in your phone that were intentionally taken, people who write about software for a living do.
Yeah. It's built on the amazing intelligence in the Photos app is what was stated at the time. There's collections, time, people, favorite memories, trips, etc. You can reorder collections. You can pin collections.
Yes, this is so... I have many albums, and I want to put stuff in like the same three albums all the time, and they're alphabetical currently. Yeah. Just scroll. Oh, I went past that letter. Go back up. This is great.
Yep.
Yeah, I think this is actually going to... like. I obviously this is like a high risk thing to redesign the Photos app. We'll have to see like what it actually is like in use, but I'm pretty optimistic. The current Photos app really has a hard time scaling to very large collections, which we all slowly accumulate. This seems like they've done a lot to try to make them more manageable.
Well, they did mention that they had, in the part of the State of the Union that we saw, that they had redone some of the Photos app in Swift UI, but not, they made a point of saying, but not the collection view, because they were showing how it could integrate with UIKit. And I think that's because Swift UI can't handle the collection view in Photos when you have a lot of photos.
Yeah, that would not be something I would use Swift UI for.
Right. They also said there's a carousel that has a new set of photos each day, which is exciting. And then on the bento box at the end, they mentioned RCS, and we all laughed because we thought that was all we were going to get with regard to RCS. But then they actually briefly said verbally that RCS is coming. And also something that I think is exciting, especially for those with not as great vision, is larger icons on the home screen. So I think that was very briefly mentioned verbally.
Yes. Did they show that? Because I would love to make some icons bigger and some icons smaller. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's my thing with game controllers. Not every button is equally important. The primary action button on a controller is more important than the tertiary button, right? So I would love to make apps bigger, but...
Did you have other thoughts on game controllers you want to share? All right. Audio and home. I don't know too much that we need to say about this. I did like the AirPods Pro... maybe only the AirPods Pro, one way or another, you can nod or shake your head to interact with Siri. So, you know, an example they gave is, you know, Marco was calling, do you want to answer? And you can shake your head laterally left and right. And Siri will interpret that as, no, I do not want to answer, which is cool. Voice isolation, which we got an email about this, actually. And I don't know. Do you remember? I feel like voice isolation was a thing in the past.
They've talked about it on the phone and various other things. I don't know why. Maybe they did it better or
it seems
newer.
Like there's like a new like ML based, because there are there's lots of new techniques out in the industry for ML-based voice isolation.
Mm-hmm. I got you.
I remember NVIDIA did this amazing demo showing it off like 2 years ago, and other products have added it here and there. So you're right, they have had like various techniques for various noise canceling and microphone isolation techniques over time. I think those have mostly just been very kind of simple hardware tricks, and this seems like it's more ML-based.
Yeah.
So this should work a lot better and be more advanced. It's going to be pretty cool if it works.
Yep.
I hope it's not AirPods Pro only. They just showed the AirPods Pro.
The voice isolation is, they said AirPods Pro. They specifically said. The nodding your head might be for both, but sorry, John, you're going to have to get on the Pro train eventually.
Yep. TVOS.
This was fun for you, huh?
This time, remember the big pep talk I gave about how third-party apps are still viable when Apple does something? Insert that here.
Oh, God. This was something.
There was a feature added to TVOS called Insight. Now, I believe it was like something else I've seen. Amazon X-Ray.
Yes, indeed.
That's right. And what else? There was some other app. Your app. That's right.
Before Casey decided to make CallSheet, we've been saying for years that X-Ray is a great feature that Amazon has, and people always have a question when they're watching a show, what is that person from? And X-Ray provides that feature. X-Ray's interface, to be clear, is terrible.
Like every Amazon interface.
Right. Casey's app, CallSheet, in case you don't know, is the thing where you can look up what people have been in movies and TV shows and so on and so forth, and it's a very nice app. The thing I would say to encourage you here is those on-screen things for doing that, I think they should be there, and they're great, but Apple's history of making an interface on the TV itself that lets you do anything sensible is not good. Yeah. I would much rather... Look, when my wife says, what is that person from? I threw an interface on the screen while we were watching the show, she doesn't want me to even pause it. She wants me to look it up on my phone, in which case I'll use CallSheet. And again, I'm not poo-pooing this feature. I think it should exist. I think it's great. Hopefully it'll have a better interface than X-Ray. But there is still definitely a place for a thing, for an app that you use on your phone to look up who that person is without pausing the show and without putting anything on the screen.
Yeah.
Well, and also the, you know, the new feature will only work inside this con. It will only work on Apple TV app. Like, it won't work in third party apps.
Yeah, which I didn't catch at first.
I thought it was just in the Apple TV player, but again, in hindsight, it does make some sense.
Right. They wouldn't have the data.
Do screen, like do the Shazam version, video Shazam.
Oh, they're definitely not doing that.
I know, but like that would be the technology.
Your TV's doing that to show you ads, yes, and, you know,
exactly, right.
But Apple's not doing
like,
that.
That technology does exist, but Apple is not using. This is just for Apple TV Plus television shows or movies. Yeah. But
plus, if I use that instead of Call Sheet, I'd be spoiled constantly on, you know, character reveals and ages and stuff like
that's
that.
True.
You know?
Yeah, I apparently owe you a drink at dinner later.
You'll be fine.
But it was funny though, because for a hot second.
I think I owe you some drinks, honestly.
Well, for a hot second, I was devastated because I thought it was for everything. And I think part of the reason I thought that, which in retrospect was silly, but I knew that there was so much AI and ML and what have you. And I'm like envisioning this world where they're like figuring out what's on screen.
I mean, they could.
Hypothetically, they could. But the more I think about it, the more I think that that's challenging, at least today. Maybe in the future it won't be. But today, I think that's really challenging.
I don't think it's challenging. I think it's expensive.
Well, and it's privacy invasive in a way also that Apple doesn't like to do. Yeah.
So anyway, there was a 5-minute window before people started reporting in and sending me texts that like, oh no, it's okay, it's just Apple TV Plus. And then I was not quite so miserable, but oof,
it's
for a
all
second
part of the developer experience.
Well, and that's the thing is underscore sitting right behind me, and he's like, nope, this is part of the process. So anyways, but yes, it was funny in retrospect, not funny at the time. Enhanced dialogue. One of my favorite features about my beloved Sonos setup is that the sound bars, or at least my sound bar, can do their own dialogue enhancing mode, which is not flawless, but it works reasonably well. And I am old enough now that I feel like, generally speaking, I can hear, but particularly at nighttime when the kids are asleep and Declan's room is right above our family room where we watch TV, I don't want to have to crank the volume in order to just understand what the heck people are saying.
Do you have reduced loud sounds on?
I understand the question. I don't recall.
You should try that.
I'll have to give that a shot. Wait,
you're talking about the reduced loud sound?
Just a compressor. Just compresses.
I leave that on all the time.
Yeah.
I should give that a shot. But one way or another, there's now enhanced dialogue for I think any playback on Apple TV, which I'm really excited for, because presumably an Apple TV box is going to have more processing power than my Arc soundbar.
Yeah, so these enhanced dialogue features exist everywhere. They're on every TV, they're on every receiver, they're on every set-top box. It's good that Apple has one, but I have to tell you, the quality of these varies widely. So hopefully Apple does a good job of it, because it's easy to just like, oh, I'm just applying an EQ curve and human voices are around here, and that is awful, and that's been around for ages, and there's, you know, increasing amounts of ML or whatever. So I hope Apple has done a good job of this, because it actually is pretty hard to do, because if you listen to a bad one, it's grating on your ears. Like, you can, like, the voices are just too loud and too clear, and everything else feels in the distance. So doing this well is actually kind of tricky, and I'm looking forward to seeing Apple's implementation.
I mean, it could literally be the exact same algorithms as the voice isolation for AirPods Pro, just like tuned down, with less reduction of the background
sound.
But
you do have to be careful, because you don't want it to sound like the people are like right in front of your face and the whole rest of the show is back there. You can over enhance it.
Yep. I mean, one thing that Apple is historically very good at is doing features like this with subtlety. Like, a lot of times they get criticized for not like doing a more extreme version or having more controls over how they're doing things like this. But I would trust them to do this well enough that it would be, if anything, people, you would say it doesn't go far enough. It's probably going to be a pretty subtle effect. Like the demo, obviously we were hearing it over concert speakers. Mm-hmm. So who knows how it sounds in person, but the demo of it seemed like it was actually fairly subtle.
Yep. Auto subtitle appearance when muting or skipping back. I thought that they already did this for like, what did she say or whatever.
They do it when you ask the Siri remote, what did they say? And then it will go backwards 3 seconds, turn subtitles on, play through, and then turn the subtitles back off, which is one of the best features of Apple TV. And now this is even more of that, of saying, look, if you just skipped back, you don't even have to, because it is kind of annoying to pick up the remote and mumble into it, what did they say or whatever. This, if you skip back, it just assumes it's because you didn't hear something. So that removes a step, and that's great. And the auto subtitling appearance when muting is a no-brainer is great.
Yeah, I love that. Support for, I think it was 21:9 projectors.
Yes.
It was whatever the standard aspect ratio is, which is kind of interesting and cool. I don't know anyone that uses an Apple TV with a projector, but I know it happens, so that's neat. And then different screensavers are going to be available, slideshows, portraits, moments from Apple TV Plus shows. And then they did a big song and dance about Snoopy and how that's going to be a screensaver, so that's cool. Before we talk WatchOS, do we want to talk about something else that's awesome?
Yes. in a moment.
Sorry, I dropped that on you a little unexpectedly.
Yes, we are also sponsored. Thanks, man. We're also sponsored this episode by Delete Me. You ever wonder how much your personal data is out there on the internet for anyone to see? It's more than you think. Your name, contact info, social security number, maybe even your home address, even like all these things for your family members too. This is all out there, and it's all being compiled by data brokers and openly sold online. Anybody can do a quick web search and get all those details. And this can lead to all sorts of problems for you. Things like, you know, phishing attempts, harassment, unwanted telephone calls. So you can protect your privacy with Delete Me. So I actually found Delete Me before they were a sponsor. I was looking for a service to kind of help clean up some of that stuff about me online a few years ago. And I picked Delete Me because it was great. And I'm actually very glad I did. It has worked fantastically. So what it does, this is a subscription service that removes your personal info from the largest people search databases on the web. And in the process, that helps prevent all those problems above, you know, doxing, unwanted phone calls, phishing scams, stuff like that. So here's what it is. You sign up for Delete Me. You tell them exactly what information you want deleted, and then they take it from there. So you can tell them, like, here's the addresses I've lived at in the past. Here's my current stuff. Here's, like, family member names. Whatever you want them to go find and delete, you give it to them, and then they go do it. They send you regular personalized reports showing what info they found, where they found it, how they were able to remove it. And it's always working for you. This isn't just, like, a one-time thing. They are constantly monitoring and removing that personal information that you don't want from the internet. So they do all the hard work for you of wiping that data and your family's personal data off as many places on the web as they can find. Data brokers hate them. When you sign up, Delete Me immediately goes to work scrubbing that info. So take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. Now at a special discount for our listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan today when you go to joindeleteme.com/ATP and use promo code ATP at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com. That's the domain name. joindeleteme.com/ATP. Enter code ATP at checkout. Once again, joindeleteme.com/ATP. Code ATP. Thanks to Delete Me for sponsoring our show.
WatchOS. They talked a lot about activity or activeness. I know that's not really a word, but anyways.
That's it, yeah. Activation.
Definitely. Activation, that's what it was. But they talked about training load, which was interesting. To be honest, I was slightly tuned out at this point because I was still figuring out if my job was going away. But
you were sending your emails.
Right, exactly. They talked about training load and, you know, oh, if you've trained really, really hard, that, you know, maybe you need to back it off a little bit so you don't get exhausted, et cetera, et cetera. You can customize the summary tab in fitness, which I'm excited about. You could also have different goals for different days. You can account for injuries. And gentlemen, you can pause for rest days.
This is
finally
great.
You know, there's someone out there who got a Series Zero watch, and they've been on a streak, and they've been getting the badges, and they haven't missed a single day. And now, finally, that person can have one day of rest.
Yeah. I don't think a Series Zero watch would have enough battery life
no,
to give you
I'm
your
saying,
stand
like,
hours.
They've been going from watch to watch and somehow haven't lost all their streaks. Right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, they've just never, because we've been saying this for years. Like they gamified this by giving you cool little badges for going on streaks, but it's unhealthy to, like, for example, keep doing the same activity through injuries or never to take a day off. And we've always been like, Apple, like, it's just, you're not promoting a healthy lifestyle. The people who are most addicted to this gamified thing are going to end up injuring themselves and making their lives worse. Let people have a day off. Pause for a day. The streak still counts. This is just a life lesson that Apple has now learned and now is passing on to us. It's okay to take a day off. And if you're injured, don't do the same activity you normally do. And now the watch understands that and will allow you to maintain your streak. And I think it is completely legitimate.
Yeah. And also, like, there's this, like, falling off the wagon effect where, like, if you have had a long streak and then you have to break it, you're forced to break it for some reason, a lot of times it's really hard to ever go back. Because you're like, well, it's over now.
Yeah.
And,
well,
and like, you never
streak.
Go back. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, you're like, well, I'm off the wagon now. Forget it. I guess I'll go back to, you know, being a slob. Like, it. And it's so, it can be very demotivating. So, actually, like, enabling rest days not only is you know, healthier mentally for the people who are trying to keep streaks going, but I think it will result in people keeping more streaks overall and not falling off that wagon as much, because it is not you're not like losing, oh, there it is, I'm gone forever, like I lost all this that I've worked for, might as well throw it away.
But it makes the Apple Watch stickier, not, you know, for self-motivated thing where, like, you're not going to switch to a different watch if you still have your streaks going.
Indeed. They talked a little bit about a Vitals app, which I'm genuinely excited about, to see kind of like an overall status of what your health is across several different metrics, which is cool because fitness obviously is specifically about exercise and things of that nature and fitness. And Vitals is more of a holistic view of everything about you.
I mean, I like what they're doing here. Like, so the idea is like daily health metrics, overall health status. If something changes in a few different ways, like if your vitals in different ways change, they'll alert you like, hey, your heart rate's been up this week, and also, you know, other stuff has changed. That's nice, but why? I have to wonder, why can't this just be the health app? Why? Like, I feel like the health app, honestly, is a mess. There's so much in there, and I don't think the health app does a good job of information architecture.
You mean on the watch? Because this is the watchOS section. You mean in general the health app?
I mean, in general, like, yeah, I think this should be just a function of the health app.
Maybe it is. Maybe there's just a Vitals tab in the health app now.
Maybe. I mean, I thought it was a whole separate app, but
I thought it was a whole separate app. I'm pretty sure it is. Mm. And I will concur. I don't want to belabor it.
Chat room saying it's in the health app on iOS and on watchOS it's separate. So maybe it's just a separate screen.
Yeah, okay. That's what I assumed.
Okay. Either way, the health app. From an information architecture perspective, the health app is a disaster. It's just terrible.
Like Apple's modern design language that they use there of just like a bunch, like a grid of square, a round rect squares with like some text in the corner, and that's it. And there's just a whole huge grid. And like, I feel like that does not scale to a lot of information. That's fine if you have a simple app like Reminders where you have like those little blocks. It's that same pattern in Reminders. That's okay there. But the health app has 1,000 different things in it. And I don't feel like it's organized well. So maybe they'll do a better job of this.
Yep. With this. Who knows? They talked about cycle tracking and gestational age, which I thought was very cool. And a lot more support about pregnancy-specific metrics. So... as an example, you know, I think they use blood pressure as an example, but there was something that they cited that it goes up quite a bit during pregnancy, and that's normally okay, but you want to keep an eye on it, et cetera, et cetera. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that's another example of like third party app opportunity type thing. Yeah. And even more so here because like the health data is essentially a shared database that other apps can access and do things with. And there are tons of pregnancy tracking apps on the App Store right now. And it's like, oh, Apple is now going to give you one for free. So why would anyone use a third-party one? I hope the third-party ones can integrate with the new pregnancy-specific information that is presumably in the health database to enhance themselves. And, of course, those apps are going to be way more sophisticated, way more varied, way more tailored to people's individual goals or whatever. So I think this will actually be a boost to that market, not a detriment to it.
Well, honestly, maybe it might have to be a detriment because a lot of times, like, remember, it came out a few years ago that the privacy of those apps is horrendous. Like, that all of the leading pregnancy tracking apps that somebody could find a couple of years ago, they were all sending that data to Facebook.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, yeah, right.
That is true. And I feel like this should help the competitive landscape should change so that now there is a privacy preserving option. So maybe apps have to do that less.
Yeah, like, I think that anytime Apple can add this kind of like even though their version is going to be more basic, you know, more just core functionality, they're going to get the 20% solution, right? But even like that is usually a good thing if the alternative is a market full of privacy invading awful apps.
I just want to sell your name to diaper manufacturers. Send ads for diaper. You know, it makes perfect sense.
That's how they do it. Connections was another section where they talked about several different things. They will automatically add new widgets to the Smart Stack watch face, which is kind of sort of the Nuvo Siri watch face. There's Translate on the Apple Watch that uses, quote, machine learning models to do the translation. Mm-hmm. live activities in the Smart Stack. This... I don't use live activities enough, but if there's anything that's going to get me on this watch face, it's live activities in Smart Stack. I am here for that. Very excited about it. And in fact, I'm jumping ahead a bit, but there seem to be a lot of different things where they're acknowledging and embracing the fact that the iPhone is kind of the core computing device of your life, even for the three of us, where I think we're all primarily Mac people, but, and John will argue with me as soon as I stop talking, but generally speaking, I think for a lot of people, the iPhone is the prime, or maybe not primary, but the most important like hub of your digital life. And I think a lot of things are now, or Apple is embracing that for a lot of features. And this is one of them, live activities on the Smart Stack. So, you know, we're getting Lyfts and Ubers and whatnot while we're here in San Jose and Cupertino. And so having that appear on your watch, whatever the live activity is on your watch, that's exciting. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, and because that is a theme throughout. I think that's a good, you know, what we have with our iPhones is it's always the primary. It's always where things come first. It's always like it's always the device that, like, no matter what is going on, if you're traveling or something, you're always going to at least have your phone. Like, it makes a lot of sense to keep the iPhone as the center of everything and yep. and to bring those features to the other platforms when you can, but still having the, because like that's no matter what Apple tries to do, the iPhone's always going to be the primary computing device.
Yep.
So as much as they can embrace that and make the iPhone help the other platforms, mm-hmm. as much as they can do that, it's, you know, it's better.
And we'll see the iPhone helping the other platforms by making appearance on them later.
Yes. Can I just say my favorite addition to watchOS, the double tap API.
So tell me more. I'm not trying to be funny. Tell me more about why that's so exciting for you. Because I don't have double tap, so I don't know what I'm missing out on.
You couldn't do it before. Only Apple had access to it.
Right. But do you use the feature in Apple stuff at all ever or no?
No, because it's very slow and unreliable.
Cool.
So like I try to use it to like dismiss notifications or whatever. Right. I have found it to be way too slow. And you know, so I have the Series 9, like I have the right hardware for it, and it's just really unreliable. It's and when it does work, it's still very, it's much slower than doing it yourself, because you have to like give it a second to recognize it, and then it like taps you to tell you, hey, I recognize this, and like it shows like a little overlay saying double tap, you know. So but the reason I want it is that my customers want to use it, and mm-hmm. I've gotten so many emails from people since it launched saying, hey, double tap doesn't work in your app. What the heck, man? Like, because they don't know that until this, the only thing third-party apps could do with it was use it to dismiss notifications
or perform
the primary action on a notification. Mm-hmm. That's all it could do. So, and of course, what they expect from OverTap is play pause. Like that when that would be what it does, right?
That makes sense. Yep.
And it just seemed like I was being neglectful by not having this in my app when really I couldn't have it in my app. So now that's going to be good for, you know, for the very basic thing. And, you know, whatever they add in the future in this area, if they add more gestures or more things like that, hopefully they will now add these switch UI modifiers for them as well.
Yep. Photos watch face gets better customization and will automatically find photos. I don't know what specifically that means. I mean, I understand those words.
It meant machine learning. That's what they said. Exactly. They still did. Now we're like, you know, a half hour and they still didn't say AI once.
All right. iPad OS 18. Yes. Or are we taking another pause?
We don't need more pauses.
Okay. Sorry. We are paused out. Okay. iPad OS 18. I would like to make an opening statement about this. Everyone was waiting for Apple to say, don't worry, you guys, we've solved multitasking.
There was no rumors about that.
No, there were no rumors, but like just this morning.
No expectations.
I think it was just this morning, and I apologize. I am not even going to be doing show notes for this episode, so the show notes are barren. But there was a Verge link that I'm not going to look up, but you can look it up yourselves. There's a Verge link where they talked about basically, I feel like it was literally this morning, like, hey, we've got this incredible hardware. Where's the software? And so I agree, John, that nobody was necessarily expecting it, but we were all hoping for it, and it didn't land. And what did land, though, was actually, for me, to this point, the most impressive stuff I saw in the entire keynote. Like, I was excited about other things for sure, but the iPad OS demo blew my mind more than anything else I think I saw during the keynote. So what did we talk about?
Well, first, it has the home screen customization from iOS 18, which honestly, that's new. Like,
it's not a given that it's going to get features.
Usually, when something cool comes to like Springboard in iOS, the home screen, the widgets, usually that either doesn't come to the iPad at all that year, or maybe comes like the following year, or it comes to the iPad in a much more limited way. In this case, all of that home screen customization and stuff that is in iOS 18 is also all in iPad OS 18. So that was actually a pleasant surprise.
Yep, couldn't agree more. So there's that. The same story with Control Center and a lot of the photos stuff. They talked a lot about a floating tab bar, which I believe they either said or implied has an associated API where...
Yes, it does.
This is like on the Apple TV Plus app where there's a tab bar at the top. And that was... I was like, okay, fine, whatever. And then they said, oh, and there's some... I don't know if it's like a hamburger button or whatever, but there's some button you can press and then that tab bar will slide down into the... You know, I was going to say the left, but wherever your text
into
starts.
A sidebar, leading.
Into a sidebar.
It'll slide down into dot leading.
Into dot leading, right? Into a sidebar. And that, I thought, was extremely cool. And so they talked about their, they made a big stink, a happy stink about how there's improved and refined animations. They talked a little bit about SharePlay, and at this point I started to pass out, but then they started talking about screen sharing and I woke back up and they said there are a couple of very interesting features. You can tap and draw on the screen to instruct the remote users. So they showed like putting a gigantic like FU, like it's right here. It's right here.
Circle arrow, the button in right, big right, hot pink marker. Right, right. Like, it's right here. Click this.
Yeah. So anyway, like a big arrow or circle or what have you. And they also said that you can ask the remote person can ask for remote control. So if you have like grandma or grandpa or what have you, and they don't understand what's going on, but they live, you know, 500 miles away, you get on a SharePlay call. I'm not clear how you do the screen sharing. It doesn't really matter. But one way or another, you can say to grandma, I would like the control, please. And you can actually perform the operation that grandma or grandpa is trying to perform, which I was very excited
oh,
about.
Oh, man. For remote
so
tech support.
To use this. Yeah.
Yeah. This would, back when I had needs like that with my grandparents, yeah, yeah. This would have been a godsend. Mm-hmm. I'm very happy for everybody who has to use this feature. Like, this is going to be a big quality of life improvement.
Yep. Then the Sherlocking continues. Poor James Thompson. I love James so much. Calculator is arriving on iPad. I genuinely double down on what you guys were saying earlier about how this doesn't necessarily hurt James, but it's not a fun feeling. And it's not, I don't know if it would help him necessarily. I mean, it does draw attention to
well,
other calculator apps.
I mean, I think pCalc is going to be fine because they're, pCalc has, with the sole exception of the iPad, has always run on platforms that had built-in calculators. Well, I guess the Apple TV, but like there were always Apple calculator apps on these platforms, and pCalc still had quite a market. I will say also, when they announced calculator for iPad, as of yet, that got the biggest applause in the event. Yeah. Like bigger, yeah, yeah, I would have expected emoji responses in iMessage to be a bigger applause, but no, calculator for iPad, by far the biggest applause in that keynote to up to this point.
This is interesting with Casey being excited about the iPad stuff we're about to see in a second. It's kind of just because of the order, because as we'll see, this thing that was presented as a feature of calculator is not a feature of calculator. It is like an OS-wide service that appears in other OSs and other places. Like, it's everywhere.
Sort of. Well, I think it's just calculator and Notes,
right,
though.
But it's clear that it's not a feature of the calculator app if Notes is using it, right?
Well,
so it's framework.
Yeah, so what we're going to talk about now is Math Notes. Like, so calculator, you know, it's calculator for the iPad, but then it has this other mode called Math Notes that...
It's totally unrelated. It might as well have been a separate app.
Like, that's the thing. Like, there's been all these apps now that are, or all these features now that are kind of buried in Apple apps in weird places. So, for instance,
you hit
like,
that one secret button on calculator.
Right. There's, you know, like the document scanning that's just built into the Files app or preview on the Mac. Like, and it has, there's a whole document scanner you can use with phone cameras and stuff, and it's tucked into weird places. Like, you don't even know it's there. Notes is the king of this. There are so many amazing features in Apple Notes that you wouldn't really expect to be in a Notes app, and it doesn't really have that much to do with Notes necessarily. Mm-hmm. And so this is one of them. So this Math Notes feature, this is what they demoed. I agree, Casey. I think this is one of the most impressive demos of the day. Math Notes, it's kind of like a combination of calculator and solver with handwriting most amazing. It's like a handwritten solver, basically.
Yeah, that's a good
the
way
most
to put
amazing
it.
Recognition and like ways to play with numbers. So this, the way it works is you use the Apple Pencil and you can like doodle up a note or whatever, and any, you know, if you write like 7 + 4 = it will recognize that as a mathematical expression and stick the answer there.
Well, there's
more. And there's so much more.
But wait, there's more. Not only does it stick the answer there, the naive way of building this is it puts, like, you know, a monospaced font.
Right.
You know, what did you say? 7 × 4 = 28 or what have you. It doesn't matter. It puts a 28 there in, like, a monospaced font, right? Oh, no, baby. It's going to try to mimic your own flippin' handwriting.
Yep.
How amazing is that? I don't understand how this is possible.
I don't know if this was part of the same thing, but I think it also improves your handwriting as well. So when you're scribbling the numbers, it's trying to, oh, you made the circle on that 9 is a little bit squished. It opens it back up for you. So it's more legible to yourself later. And then it writes the answer. And then like Solver, which is a great app that we should link in the show notes that Casey's not making, that will it's a live thing. It's like a spreadsheet where the answer is based on the things that are before it. One of the really cool things I think I saw in the keynote, was hard to tell because it was far away, is what they were like, oh, you can change the numbers. And like, oh, changing numbers, is it going to make me get an eraser tool and then carefully scribble
and
out the
you
nine?
Can. The presenter did that. That right. was one of the choices.
But I think I think there's like a gesture to sort of just swipe over the nine, and the whole nine, it knows where the nine is. You know what I mean? And the whole nine disappears and you type a new number in its place. Like,
and there's a little slide. If you hover over it, it shows a little slider above it, and you can just slide the value up and down.
And it does more complicated math. So more ways for kids to cheat on their homework. Not that they need it anymore, because there's a million web-based tools that will do all this for you already.
Yeah.
I personally am not a handwriting person. That's why I like computers. But tons of people are. I like Solver. I like typing actual numbers. I don't want to see my handwriting. I don't want to handwrite math equations. But sometimes, especially if you don't know like math ML or how to like make the big, you're in like an actual math class, we have big giant expressions with fractions and exponents and lots of parentheses and square roots over whole big things. And like, you know, doing algebra, this looks like a great teaching tool. And this, you know, it's essentially, you know, I don't know if it's a public framework, but it's a private framework that's used by two of Apple's apps. And it's so amazing. They should just spread it everywhere. Like PencilKit. I hope they eventually will make this a third party thing that you can just pop up, because it's just what a great app. And for the iPad, like, it's their one app platform that has a pencil.
This is
like, what can you do with the pencil? They're really cranking up the features that and we'll see more later that appear with the pencil in PencilKit or with pencil related things in the OS.
This feeds right into SmartScript actually. So this was Math Notes and SmartScript seem to be the same system, you know, just so between, you know, Calculator has Math Notes. Notes also has Math Notes, but Notes takes it further with the idea of SmartScript. So this is basically the engine that recreates your handwriting as like a font, basically dynamically. And so as you handwrite notes, it figures out what your handwriting looks like. As John mentions, if you like kind of squish a letter or flub a letter, it will correct it to make it more readable as you go. And because what it's doing is converting your handwriting into reflowable text. So after you've handwritten a whole page of notes with the Apple Pencil in Apple Notes, you can like delete words by scratching them out and then just collapses them. You can copy and paste. You can paste other text in and it will paste it in your handwriting.
It's just nuts.
I said to the dancer next to me, I said, oh, I'll also sign checks for you.
Yeah. Right.
Like, wait, it's pasting. Oh, this is handwriting?
Do kids still need doctor's notes or like notes from your parents to get out of school? Oh, this would be great.
No, kids have other ways of hacking that. They always do. But yeah. You know, this is definitely a cool feature. And it also has kind of like shades of Newton. You know what I mean? Being able to use handwriting as text and interchangeably. It's amazing looking tech. I hope it works as well as the demos.
It demoed phenomenally. If you watch nothing else from this keynote, if you ask me, watch this like 5 to 10 minute demonstration. It was, I think Jenny Chen did it. It was phenomenal. It was so cool. It doesn't evaluate an expression until you draw an equal sign, which I thought was clever. She had a column of numbers. She was putting together like a
budget or something.
And there was a column of numbers, and she said, I really wish I had a sum of this. And so she just underlined the bottom number, and then magically a sum appears. It was unbelievable. She put a graph in one of them. She was doing like some physics problem.
Yeah, it has a built-in grapher because, of course, might as well. Like, what?
Why not?
It was incredible.
Unreal. It was really unreal.
I wish I was not like John and I hand wrote things.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I just never do. Yeah. But
I mean, like, again, if you don't know like the correct note, if you ever tried to enter a complicated algebraic expression, like in, you know, Wolfram Alpha or in something or whatever, and you don't know how to do that, or you're trying to use the tools, I need a big parentheses, and you're using a toolbar, or if you don't know the ASCII syntax for it or whatever, it's just like, just let me draw it. Just let me draw the expression, and, you know, that's... This is really making this stuff more accessible. And again, there are web-based tools that do this, and there are teaching tools that do all these things as well. And there's Wolfram Alpha exists, but this is on your iPad. This comes with your iPad.
I think this also shows like some of the kind of hilarious limits of the rumor game, because it was rumored that there would be like Math ML support in Notes.
Yeah,
which like. Okay.
It undersells it, yeah.
Yes, it's like, that is sort of what this is, but it's totally missing what this really is.
Yeah, it's a Newton plus Solver. Yeah.
Exactly.
So we get to macOS 15. Sequoia is the answer, which is good because everyone definitely knows how to correctly pronounce and spell Sequoia. But here we are. It gets macOS 15 gets all the note stuff we just talked about. Well, I guess except the pencil-related things.
Not necessarily, because... people can use tablets, drawing tablets with the Mac.
I wonder if a Wacom would work. Yeah. I didn't even think about that. Then this is what I was alluding to earlier. They had a big section on continuity. And I think for me, If you're going to watch one thing, watch Math Notes. If you're going to watch two things, watch this iPhone mirroring stuff. So what they said was, hey, what about occasions when your phone is out of reach, but you want to do something with your phone? Well, what they demoed was you can mirror your phone's screen onto your Mac. And then not only that, but you can interact with your phone using your keyboard and mouse, which was very freaking cool. And then apparently you can pinch to zoom.
They mentioned that. I was wondering, as soon as they did that, I'm like, oh, that looks like a simulator.
Right.
Are they going to make users hold down option to get the little two balls and whatever? I'm like, there's no way that they're going to ask users to do that. But then I realized everyone has a trackpad, so you can just pinch.
Oh, but that's true. Yeah.
This is your virtual phone on your Mac screen. You're like, oh, how lazy are you? Why don't you just go get your phone? But honestly, it's a backdoor to let you run iPhone apps on your Mac, essentially. Because previously, right, only iPad apps could be run on your Mac in their little windows. Now your whole freaking phone is there on your Mac. I think this is a great feature. It makes such a perfect integration of, like, because they make the phone platform and the Mac, like, excellent. I give this two thumbs up.
Yeah.
I don't even know how often I'll use it, but it just seems like something that should be possible.
Yeah.
Now it is.
Yeah,
and think of so many. Also, notifications from the phone will show up on the Mac. Hmm. The audio from the phone comes through the Mac. You can have standby support where, like, the phone can be on a charging stand in standby showing some widgets next to your desk, and you can be using it on the Mac. Like, you can drag and drop files to the phone from the Mac. Like, that, I think this is going to be one of those things that we start to use all the time and not even realize
and
it.
And wonder how we lived before it existed.
Yeah, even just something simple, like what if you break your screen on your phone and you need to, like, you know, get info on it or something.
Extend the life of phones with broken screens. Right. I just need to bring this laptop around with me to use my phone.
Yeah, or get info off of it before you get a replacement phone for me.
Maybe Apple will start selling a headless iPhone Shuffle.
Cheesy. I can't even with that.
It sounds like a stick of Trident gum, but you need another device to use it.
No buttons.
No buttons. No, I just want to reiterate what Marco just said, because he went so fast, but I think it's important. A notification comes through on your Mac. It looks like it is peer with all your Mac notifications. You can click on it on the Mac and it will start up the phone mirroring, so you'll see your phone and then you can interact with that notification because your phone has now started whatever, you know, app that notification came from, which is incredible. And like you said a moment ago, you could have standby. I don't personally use standby just because I don't really have, like, a dock that makes it easy, but I love the idea of it. But if you are a standby person, you can have your phone sitting next to your computer, and similar to how CarPlay eventually started working, where it was not literally what you were doing on your phone, it became like a second screen. Well, standby can remain up while you're interacting with your phone on the computer. So your phone is doing two things concurrently. Very, very, very cool stuff.
And this is also reinforcing the Mac's dominance as the platform where you can do everything.
That's true. You can run
iPad apps. You can run Mac apps. You can use your entire phone. It integrates with all these things. You can develop apps for all those platforms. The only thing you can't do is the Vision OS stuff, and that still kind of seems like it's off in the corner.
Yeah. And the Pencil, too.
Yeah, I do wonder about the Pencil. Obviously, you can use an iPad as sidecar. I don't think there's any Pencil support in that mode. But technically speaking, it seems like it would be plausible to allow you to use your Apple Pencil on your iPad screen when using a sidecar. And we'll see how. I mean, they should just make Touch Max with Pencil support. I mean, they'll get to it eventually, but not this year.
And cellular and OLED.
Yeah. Well, you know, get in line. The OLED we're going to get. Don't worry about it. That's coming.
What else do they have? Video conferencing stuff.
Oh, wait. Window tiling. You blew right past that.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. That's true.
There goes a bunch of apps that manage windows. Don't worry, John. Yep. You're totally safe from being Sherlocked.
Well, my app doesn't do any of this stuff. Like, again, they still don't expose enough APIs for you to do something good. I know window tiling is one of the few things you can do because you don't need interactive support for it. It's like, oh, I just enter a keyboard command and the active window goes into the third or a quarter or whatever. But, like, real-time interactive window dragging, like when you're dragging a shape in, like, Adobe Illustrator or Affinity Designer or something. There's no APIs for that, and Apple doesn't do it itself. And so, but yeah, this does hurt a lot of apps that do the same thing. This is just catch up with Windows. They've had this forever. People just expect to be able to yank a window to the side of the screen and have it tile, and now it does, and it will hurt a bunch of third-party apps. But third-party apps do way more than this. So, again, there's room for them to exist.
Though this is another moment where there was a lot of applause when we were sitting there. And it's so funny, too, because you guys have talked about, or maybe just Marco, I guess, has talked about in the past, they don't have the pregnant pause, you know, when they're waiting for people to stop clapping because it's a recorded video.
They just keep going.
They just keep plowing forward, but there was a lot of applause for that. So like I said, there's some video conferencing stuff. I mean, they have Zoom style fake backgrounds.
Yeah, I thought they already had that, but yeah, it's a catch-up feature.
Yeah, system wide, you know, background replacement for any video input.
And presumably they'll do a less janky job of it. I mean, their demo looked pristine, but we'll see.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's a competition to see who has the best machine learning.
Everyone's demos always look pristine. Let's see what happens in, like, when you're in dim lighting and stuff like that.
Right.
All right, so real-time follow-up. I just adjusted where I was sitting, and I definitely kicked over my capped water bottle. So maybe John was right about this.
Wow.
I had it at the edge of my chair, and I adjusted where I was sitting. And
see? Levels. Water bottle. Levels are important.
Levels. I've had opinions about where 1Password has been going for the last year or two.
You?
And I will say that there is now a Passwords app on all of the platforms, including Windows on the iCloud for Windows app. And I will be exploring that later this year. And I'm going to stop.
As will I.
That's all I'm going to say about that for now.
Yes, I'm looking for there. It is not as full-featured as 1Password by any means. In particular, it seems I haven't explored yet whether there's any kind of group functionality like family sharing and things like that.
So I had somebody talk to me.
There is.
We have that already?
Well, yeah. So I had somebody reach out on Mastodon because I think I'd cast out a question about this. And I know that there is something, but I don't know.
Talked about it on the show. Now you're both like this.
Jeez.
I'm currently using it. Yes, you can make arbitrary groups where you share things in your iCloud keychain. I have two groups. I have family passwords and parent passwords. And once you put a thing into that group, it is shared with the people who you say. And it's just completely arbitrary. It works great. I mean, for passwords, the verification codes, the whole nine yards. And yeah, this app, I mean, people have been asking for this because passwords, like the keychain access app, is obscure and weird.
That
right?
is not for regular
right.
people to use.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't think it's for me to use.
And they shouldn't really touch it.
It's
right?
not for any people.
But then there was the password, you know, settings thing on iOS, and then the password preference pane / whatever they're called in settings, right? But it's just kind of buried, and people were making shortcuts to launch it, but now there will be a dedicated app, so it's better. It's more exposed. It just makes it feel more comfortable, like, yes, when I need to get my password, it's secure. Now, keychain access does more than just passwords. Keychain access has secure notes. Keychain access has all your stupid developer certificates in it.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff isn't exposed in passwords. Like, that is in the keychain, so to speak, and that is important stuff. And so keychain access has to still exist, but regular people should not touch that because you can really hose yourself by like, oh, I don't know what these certificates are. Let me delete all these. Like, even if you're not a developer, don't do that. Like, your root SSL certificates are represented in there. There's your login keychain and the system keychain and things that people don't have to understand. Plus, making, certificate signing requests for making SSL certificates if you're not using Let's Encrypt, which you should be. like, keychain access will soldier on. But since the last version of macOS, when you launch keychain access, it says, hey, are you sure you want to launch keychain access?
Yeah, it's like passwords are over here.
Yeah, do you want me to just open the passwords preference pane? And now I hope it will say, actually, there's a whole other app called Passwords. You should go to that one. And it's a Swift UI app, and it looks nice. And I hope it doesn't have right-aligned text fields for the passwords, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, there are going to be some things, you know, like secure notes you mentioned are not there. But, like, you know where secure notes are? In notes. Like, you can make a locked note and
But those aren't in Keychain. I do wonder how they're going to square this, because I do have secure notes. Like, the secure notes in notes are in the notes database and encrypted. The secure notes in Keychain access, I believe, are in the Keychain with all of the, in iCloud Keychain with all the secure synced stuff. I may be wrong about that, but I think there are two different worlds, and I wonder how they're going to reconcile that, because that is a feature that people like 1Password, like, they just want to, like, here's an arbitrary list of secure stuff that I want to be locked up or whatever. And you can do that in Keychain, but it's a terrible interface for it. Then using it in Notes is much nicer, so I hope that's what people are doing.
I wonder if maybe they're just trying to keep the iCloud Keychain data size small and lightweight. Like, you know, with 1Password, you can have just arbitrary files that you stick in there. And and the way it does it is honestly kind of rough. I've like scanned my driver's license and have the picture of it in there, for instance. Like, you know, but if you put like one image or one PDF into Keychain, it's going to be way larger probably than everything else in there, and that's just for one of them. So, like, if they keep the size of everything small, maybe that helps them keep it fast and reliable.
All right, they talked about Safari for a bit. They said the quote, private browsing, that's actually private, which I thought was funny.
They didn't go deeper into that, but we all know who they're.
Well, yeah, and then the next line was, if you've missed anything we've added to Safari over the last few years, it's time to check it out. Like, they were clearly targeting Chrome, because, like, look, the reality is Safari has a Chrome problem. Chrome is way more popular than Safari, and Google is being extremely aggressive at getting the most people possible to switch to it. Like, Google is so, like, the second you sign into any Google service, you get that email saying, like, complete your Google setup, and it like hammers home, you got to install Chrome on all your devices. Like, The fact is, Safari has a severe problem with like losing people to Chrome a lot over the years. So this was clearly targeted at that, and I think it's good to see Apple being a bit aggressive there because they have to be.
Yep, couldn't agree more. So they highlighted, quote, machine learning, quote, which includes directions to things that it detects on the page, summaries of pages, quick links to learn more about, like, people, movie, music, TV shows. This was not a call sheet thing in my eyes. That's just, you know, hey, there's...
It's just, basically, this is all kind of Safari saying the web is junked up with crap. And we know when you land on a web page, maybe you just want to know what the deal is with this TV show and you can't see it through the barrage of ads and other garbage. And so this reader mode that's existed for years, it will summarize it. And if there's media stuff, it will try to extract that stuff and probably give you a button so you can see it on Apple TV Plus or, you know, like it's an opportunity for them to integrate with streaming services. But it's also just a lot of Safari's tools seem like the web is an annoying place to be sometimes. And we will try to use our application to scrape out the stuff that you actually want and present it to you in a nice way. And I appreciate that.
Yep. Reader includes now a table of contents and a summary, which I thought was very cool. It's in like a little sidebar area, which was neat. Then they talked about Viewer, which was specifically for video playback. It's unclear, like John wrote in the notes, does this work on YouTube? Question mark? We don't know. So it's unclear what the situation is, but it has a mode where the video will take up the entire window area, which I really liked because I don't necessarily want to go full screen with the video, but I want it to make the video take up the entire window
area. And it uses the native player, too. Like, if you watch some webpage that has video and it's some weird video player and there's a bunch of blinking ads in the corner and there's something, like, this will yank it out into the native player somehow. That's why I asked if it works on YouTube, because how would that work? There's a bunch of utilities that do that with YouTube now where they'll essentially modify the markup on the page to let you use the native player, turn it into an HTML5 player. So that'd be the first thing I tried in that. But that's, you know, it's good to have that feature available. These features are great because if you don't want to use them, they don't mess with your web browsing. But it's always worth a try. And I've been using Reader more and more often just because so many web pages are so junked up, it's impossible to actually read them.
It's bad. John, there was some talk about gaming. So anyway,
So the game porting toolkit, they are not budging on this. The idea that this is a tool for you to port your games, as opposed to what other people like, you know, Valve has done with the Steam Deck and everything, of saying, no, Apple will take care of this. You just run your game and we will make it work on the Mac. They're saying, no, this is a tool for you, developer, for you to make your game to run on the Mac, because we want it to be essentially a native Mac game. We don't want this to be a way to run Windows games on Mac, although it is. And they mentioned Crossover and that whatever that whiskey thing is. Like, there's a bunch of other tools that use the game porting toolkit to essentially provide an app that's like, hey, go here and you can play Windows games on your Mac, and you totally can, right? But Apple is not on board with that. And when they said this, it was like, why don't you do what they're doing, Apple? But like, no, Apple says, we want you to port your games, and we found two more developers who are porting games that you played 3 years ago.
Wow.
I mean, the most interesting thing is, like, they mentioned Frostpunk, which I don't know much about, but they mentioned Control, which was one of the first sort of AAA games to really emphasize ray tracing. They're like, hey, you just got an NVIDIA card with ray tracing support, and you might not know what the hell that's good for. We'll get Control, because it has a mode where you can turn on ray tracing, and it looks kind of cool. And again, that was years ago. Now it's available on the Mac. As you know, Macs and iPads have ray tracing hardware in their GPUs, and so that's a good get for them. But this is, you know, this is back in time. So if you've been wanting to play Control, which is a pretty cool game, you can try it out now on your Mac. And then Ubisoft out there talking about Prince of Persia and the new Assassin's Creed game. So Apple is schmoozing the developers enough to get them on board, but some of these games are not three-year-old games, like the Assassin's Creed. It's the upcoming one, so there's support there. So they seem to be making some headway with the big developers, right? It's just kind of one of those things where Apple has to get to the point where when a cool game is coming out, a Mac user doesn't have to think about whether it will be available on their platform. All they have to ask is this a platform exclusive? Because that's what people think of. Oh, there's a game coming out. And what they want to know, is this a platform exclusive? Is it only on PlayStation? Is it only on Xbox? Right? Is it only on PC? And if they say no, it's a cross-platform game, which most AAA games are, because they want to make money from everybody. When they say that, Mac users know they're still excluded. No, it's not platform exclusive. It's everywhere, except for the Mac, obviously. Right? That's the hurdle they have to get over. And so it takes bring up a new developer every year to say, we have this game, we have that game. They have to get it to the point where gamers, when they hear a game is not platform exclusive, can assume that it's on the Mac, and we are so far from that. But baby steps. Every year there's one more developer, one more game. It's just at this rate, it'll be like 2076 before that happens.
Do we know, John, if your ancient piece of garbage slow Mac Pro is going to be able to work with anything?
It seems like no. I mean, they were pretty clear. Like, I mean, they didn't say anything about OS supported platforms, but I would assume this is a bad assumption. Previous years, you would assume that if this version of macOS did not support Intel, they would have said it in the keynote. But in recent years, it seems like they leave unfortunate news out of the keynote and maybe save it for State of the Union or something, but they didn't say anything. So I'm assuming Sequoia still runs on Intel, minus all the features we're going to talk about in a little bit. But just, you know, a listener sent in a link to our predictions from past episodes, because we mentioned that in the last episode. Like, what were our predictions? I was kind of surprised to hear myself saying that my prediction was WWDC 2024, but then I heard the reasoning. That would be pretty much the exact same time span for when Apple dropped PowerPC support, which is 3 years and 7 months after the first Intel Mac. So if they follow the same logic, they should have dropped Intel support today. Mm-hmm. I don't think they did. So therefore, they're going even longer with this transition. So good for them. Casey's prediction was 2026, and Marco just waffled.
Usually that's my cup of tea.
Sounds about right, yeah.
All right.
All right. Now we have a little over an hour in. We have our first mention of artificial intelligence.
Yeah. This was... I think I'm going to request and give myself an opening statement. I felt like what we all wanted, or certainly what I wanted, and I think we talked about this last week, was we wanted the adults in the room. And that's not really to slag on Microsoft necessarily or Google, but we wanted somebody with a little bit of, I can't think of ways to say this that aren't going to sound mean, but here we are and I'm very tired. So we wanted people that were going to have taste and have not class, but just apply artificial intelligence and large language models and things like that in ways that actually help regular humans. Not for me to figure out an FFmpeg incantation, but to do like normal stuff. And Craig comes out, and or maybe it was Tim. I think it was Craig, though.
It was Tim first.
Okay. And says, you know, several things. I'm going to read. These may not be verbatim quotes, but I think they're worth noting. They called it Apple Intelligence. I don't recall exactly when the reveal was, but they said, you know, we want to ensure that the outcome of using AI features reflects the principles at the core of our promise. We want them to be powerful enough to help with the things that matter most. They need to be intuitive and easy to use, deeply integrated into product experiences, and they should understand you and be grounded in your personal context. What is your routine? Who are your relationships with? What kind of communications do you participate in? And so on. And obviously, privacy is a very big deal. And so they say, oh, I think this is when the reveal was. It goes beyond artificial intelligence. It's personal intelligence. It's now Apple intelligence.
So, that what you were saying about like being adults and like sort of, it could be phrased as being less hasty, being more conservative. But really, what it is, is their Apple's implementation of everything. As they said, it reflects a value system. Apple has a value system that informs their products. Every company does. But the thing is, the value system of many companies is unattractive to customers, so they don't talk about it. Like, their value system may be, we need as much of your information as possible because we can sell ads better to it. And they don't want to say that to you because it doesn't make you want to buy their products. But that is their value system, and it is embodied in their product, right? And so Apple's value system... and again, it's not because Apple is a magnanimous or whatever. Apple's business model does not involve selling advertisement and collecting information about you to sell to advertisers. That's why they do this. It's not because Apple is good. And you can say, well, maybe, you know, because Apple does have ad type businesses or whatever. And we've talked about Apple's conflicts with their services business versus other ones or whatever. But Apple's value system is such that telling it to customers is advantageous for their business.
Yeah.
And do they live up to their value system all the time? No.
No.
Like, we call them on it, right? But they do have a value system. And if you look at the amount of work and the amount of sort of technology they put into trying to implement artificial intelligence stuff within the bounds of their value system, you see that it's not like BS. They're not blowing smoke up your butt. They did a lot of work that they didn't have to do to make these features exist and fit within their value system. And the problem is, this thing that's sweeping the industry, this whole AI trend with LLMs or whatever, a lot about it is counter to their value system of privacy mm-hmm. and useful approach and making it easy for everybody. And so Apple had to figure out how we have to get in on this train because, you know, it's the trend or whatever. And Apple doesn't always follow trends, but Apple sees the value using the value too much. They see how good these features could be. So they said, we can't ignore this. We have to do something here. But how do we take this thing that by its very nature consumes information indiscriminately, gives bogus answers to things, mm-hmm. potentially harmful, offensive things that we don't want? How do we figure out how to provide the benefit to people while still keeping it within our values? And I was honestly very impressed with the lengths that they have gone to try to do what everyone else is doing in their catch up in a way that, like, I bet other companies are looking at this like, they did what? For what reason? Why would they do all that work? To preserve privacy? That doesn't make any sense. You know, so go fast and break things. So I came away really impressed with what they've done. I mean, obviously the features that we're going to talk about, it's like, okay, yeah, you can, every one of these features, you can say someone else had this already, but I feel much more comfortable using these features in the way that Apple has implemented them. And it remains to be seen, and we'll talk about for the next year, how do they actually work? Because if you're all wonderful and privacy preserving and deeply integrated into the operating system, but it doesn't work well, we'll complain about it. But it sure demoed well.
Yeah, I thought they handled it with a deft hand. I thought it was well done.
Because keep in mind, like the environment into which they are announcing these AI-based features, some of which are server-based, you know, and this is a awfully hostile environment. You know, in the culture right now, in the media, in the press, even, you know, just among the public, there's a lot of hate around AI stuff these days.
Yeah,
it's a very, very hot area, and Apple historically has been hit or miss in terms of how they've been able to read the room in those ways.
That's true.
And I was a little concerned for them going into this, honestly. But I think they did a really good job with it. As John said, like I think their approach to doing this in the Apple way, with, you know, all the privacy focus and everything, I think it probably will result in not being as good or as capable as some of the other systems here and there. But overall, I think what they've shown, again, we'll see how it works, but I think what they've shown has a pretty good chance of working well enough that we will decide as Apple users this is worth the trade-off.
Actually, I think they might have an actual advantage this time because, well, we'll talk to it when we get to it, I guess, but like a lot of the capabilities they're providing require information that is not readily accessible to anything except for the OS platform, you know, because they have access to everything. And normally, like, you wouldn't want to use a platform that's like, we're going to take all your information and chuck it over the fence to OpenAI, right? And that'll give us these amazing features. But because Apple has implemented all of their AI features in such a privacy-preserving way, they feel free to pull literally anything, everything, all your relationships, all your contacts, all your photos, all your everything, because they know they're not sending all that information to the server to be harvested for advertising purposes. Right. They're custom selecting just the two things you need. Your wife's name is this. Here's a picture of her. Here's the information we have about her. Here's the question the person asks. And then it processes your request and discards that information. You would not want that information to being sent to arbitrary third-party AI vendors. You would never, like, say you're using this cool AI tool and says, great, I need access to all your photos and all your contacts and everything you've written in your messages and all your email. And it's like, you would never give that. It's like, well, we need that to do cool AI stuff. It's like, but do you need it all now? And they'd be like, yes, sell ads, right? So I think Apple's ability to pick and choose just the slices they want should make it possible for them to add not creepier features, but features that, as they said, they take your personal context into account without you feeling like you're giving them everything. Never mind that Apple already has access to everything, because if you use Apple Photos, they have all your photos. But like the whole idea of like, well, Apple doesn't have access to your photos end-to-end encrypted, and Apple doesn't have access to your messages end-to-end encrypted, except for iCloud backups, unless you enable advanced data protection. Anyway, it's the world is complicated, but I think in this case, they may actually be at an advantage here because they no longer have barriers to combining information about you to give good answers. They feel free to just yank it all because they have this very privacy preserving way that they're doing it.
Yeah. And I love that, you know, kind of as expected, they are doing as much as they can locally on device. And that's great for privacy concerns in lots of ways, because then you can have even more access to things. But also it's great for latency and performance. Like that, you know, some of the biggest problems that I've always had with Siri is that it's just so incredibly inconsistent in ways that feel kind of like server failures or server timeouts or things like that. And so by putting so much on device And of course, by also having probably a pretty strong financial incentive to put more and more on device over time and to minimize server requests, that is both good for privacy. And you know, you're right, like, you know, when they do have to send them to servers or to another model, they're sending a minimal set of information, and that's good. But I got the impression that most requests are intended to be handled fully on device. And that's going to be just amazing for consistency and performance also.
Yeah, the one thing they don't have with this, and we talked about with learning, the LLMs learning and everything, is they're not pitching, and they certainly don't have the idea of your own personal assistant that learns about you over time. Right. That's not this. This is like one offs. So you have an agent. It can answer questions. It can take commands or whatever. But it immediately forgets everything. The servers forget everything. The client forgets everything. I know they have the semantic model, and they talked about this. It's like, we have a semantic model. They didn't want to say we have the equivalent of Microsoft's recall database on your phone. But don't think about that comparison. Right. Because they do have this local only semantic model of all this stuff that is the stew that processed all your email and all your photos and all your other things. So you can ask Siri questions. Find me the picture of this person with this thing or whatever. And it can pull it out because it's already done that processing. But there's no sort of like agent that learns about you, because if there was, it would live only on your phone. And when your phone goes in a lake, you would lose it.
Well, I think the phone is the agent in a way, like that the semantic index that you know they kept talking about. I think what they're trying to do is use all the data and info that you already entrust to your phone, not do something like Microsoft Recall or Rewind AI, where, you know, not creating like a whole new record of every single thing, like a screen recording.
It's not as in readable form. It doesn't have plain text versions and it doesn't have screenshots, but it has hopefully that information inside it.
Right. But I think, you know, what they are doing seems to be, you know, more like a search index, but you know, yeah. it's a search index in AI terms of information that your phone already is keeping. It doesn't seem like it's keeping new records.
But it's not learning anything. Like it's not gaining knowledge over time to become more and more intimately familiar with you. It is always sort of just in time what it pulls from its semantic index, and it can answer your question, but there's no teaching it anything. Because the whole point is, if there was teaching it, what would you be teaching? Would you be teaching anything that's only on your device? To do sort of a learning agent that learns about you and gets smarter over time, that would have to live somewhere other than on your phone, and then introduce a whole host of other problems. So they're not even addressing that. They're saying, you know, this will crunch through the data on your phone, which is all the data in your life, and you could ask it questions and it can give you answer, but it's never going to get any more knowledgeable about you other than you just adding new photos and new messages or whatever. Like, there's no learning.
Well, but I think that is learning. Like, you know, you can't give a huge preamble to your system prompt to, you know, things like, please speak to me only in limericks. Like, you know, you can't do that.
No, I mean like learning, like as in, you know, getting familiar with you and like just the dream of the AI of like a thing that actually, we discussed it. The large language models don't learn in the ways that people think they do, right? And Apple is not changing that here. I just think it's interesting to clarify, because they do have that, by going with this approach, they do have the problem of where would this thing live? Whereas all the voracious server-side people are like, don't worry, it all lives in our cloud. You'd suck all your information up, and if they figure out how to make that learn, don't worry, you have your own private one and it gets smarter over time. And Apple is not, doesn't have the ability to do that with this approach. I don't think it's going to hurt them, because as we discussed last episode, there is no good way to do that with LLMs right now. But if there ever is, Apple may need to, there may become a time where some intelligence needs to live somewhere other than on your phone, and I'm sure Apple will work hard to find a privacy preserving way to do that.
All right, let's talk about how we're actually using this model.
Yep, so they talked about several different things, and it started with capabilities. So basically, what are we doing with this? And they talked about language. So prioritizing notifications, which seems like, you know, low-hanging fruit in terms of a good way to use it. Maybe a very difficult thing to implement, but in terms of a good way to use this sort of thing.
Are they going to prioritize down the Apple Store notification I got this morning?
No, highest priority.
Easy. Yeah, right.
You need a Father's Day gift. And it's like, thank you so much, Apple Store.
I know this is a stupid tangent, but like, you know the Apple TV thing that tells you a sports score that pops over your screen?
Yeah.
How do you disable that? I thought I had disabled it.
I went through all the settings. That drives me crazy.
I have never watched
a sport on Apple TV ever. No part of all the information Apple knows about me would indicate that I like sports at all.
I didn't gather that if I
do. And yet, I'm getting those sports promos on top of everything I watch on the Apple TV. It makes me want to set it on fire. I get know. So mad.
There is some way to disable this, I'm sure. I thought I had disabled it. That's why, but I can't. Someone write in and tell us how to actually disable it, because it's driving me insane.
Chuck your app.
Anyway, it will prioritize those. Top priority. And, all right, the movie you're watching, it's real important for you to know the score on a sports game that you don't care about.
Yeah. Right. Hopefully Apple's learning index is better now than whatever's running on the Apple TV.
Sometimes I don't even know what sport they're talking about. They're like, Rodgers and Harrison are in the, like, I don't know who these people are. Am I supposed to know people by their last name? I can't tell what sport you're talking about.
All right, so then there's new writing tools that are available system-wide. They made mention, I forget how they phrased it, but basically anywhere you would have a text field, like an actual Apple-vended text field, you can do rewrite, you can summarize. At some point, they talked about changing the tone. That might have been email-specific, I don't recall, but you can change the tone of things.
I think it's anywhere. I think all these, this entire feature class is called rewrite, and I think this is in any standard text field. Like Craig Federighi said in the Don't Call It a Talk Show fake talk show they held afterwards,
we should probably explain what that is in a minute, but carry on. Yeah,
that basically that it works anywhere that you currently see things like spell check, like, you know, so any standard system,
third party apps, not just anywhere. Yeah. You see those standard controls, and I was like, I believe Mac OS 8 had a way to select text and summarize it. We've come a long way. That summarization was not very good. I believe it would just pick the most relevant sentences based on analysis, just string those together, which worked about as well as you can imagine. But yeah, this another catch-up feature. Every app that we've used with AI enhancement has a feature to summarize it and rewrite it and fix the right. But, you know, they're implementing it well. It's system-wide. It's available to third parties. We hope it works well.
Yep. I think that it does make me a little bit uneasy that, like, all right, so here we are. We're having AI generate and edit our messages that are going to be sent to someone else who's going to use AI to summarize them. And it's like, what are we doing? Like, what? Yeah. This seems like such a waste.
I mean, in some respects, like, you would hope that this will teach people to be better writers when they see how things are rewritten.
Do calculators teach people how to do math themselves better?
Not. It's not quite the same, because you just care about the answer with a calculator, where I assume people will read the revised writing to see if it is acceptable to them. Maybe that's not...
That's a big assumption.
I know, but like things like that, I think you can learn by seeing how... If you had a human editor revise your writing and you watch them do it, you will eventually become a better writer. I'm not saying this is a tool to become a better writer, but I think there is some learning happening there, because a lot of time people just write a certain way and they don't think about it, and just having somebody rewrite their stuff, like even if it's a computer, and them seeing, oh, that actually is better that way, can teach them to be a better writer in small ways. But we'll see how much people actually use these features. And for people not reading, that's obviously the danger case of like, well, I'll just hit this button and then I'll hit send. People are going to get burned by that. They're going to learn, oh, maybe I shouldn't read what I wrote. Like, it's one of those things. Tools to give you enough rope to hang yourself, and I think this is the case with that.
I do like, though, like, the one of the options. So, first of all, rewrite's going to give you, like, a really, really good proofread, you know, grammar check kind of thing. It's going to be more advanced than most grammar checks. Isn't there a service, Grammarly, is it?
Grammarly,
what everyone uses for this. So, like, that's good to have that be on device, too, to not have basically a keylogger from someone else. so that's good. But also, like, I like that they have tone changes as one of the options to rewrite messages. So, like, you can make your writing more formal or whatever. And I think that's nice. Or, like, you know, to have different, like, sentiment analysis to have it be, like, maybe less negative. That, I think, is going to be nice for people who maybe are not great at that kind of writing or even that kind of speaking.
Yeah. I mean, like forum software has had stuff like that for years where they'll say, before you hit send on this message, it seems pretty aggressive. You sure you don't want to count down? You know, like, people have been using it to try to make people be less obnoxious online. I tried to write down the tone things, but they were all, like, nice. I was like, do you want your tone to be more concise or more friendly or more conciliatory, right? Where is the more aggressive setting? I want it to be more assertive. I want it to be like, maybe you're negotiating for real estate over email or something. Like, that wasn't in the options, and I kind of understand that, because the thing will just start threatening people's lives or whatever, right?
Make me a better negotiator.
Right, but this is part of them being conservative with, like, let's just have all the tone settings to be make you sound nicer, and none of them to be, because sometimes you do want to be more assertive, but AI will not, it's too dangerous for AI to help you with that at this point.
With respect, I don't think that you needed to be more assertive about the blocking wheel
I was
nuts.
So nice about it. I was just mostly incredulous.
No, but it's good too. Like, you know, for people who are trying to, like, write a formal business email or something, and maybe they don't have that kind of writing skill, or maybe they don't know English that well. Like, I think this has a lot of really good applications. Mm-hmm. But I think we are definitely going to have the problem of people not reading what it wrote and just sending it.
Yeah, you know, and then people don't read emails anyway. Like, these are all us exchanging so much text is such a big change from when I was a kid, when people did not exchange text this much, period, in their entire lives. Like, they didn't write letters to each other, and there was no text messaging, no email, no this, no, like, now people work with text so much more. I think it is making people better writers. And I think you learn, like, when you get your first job where you have to do, like, job email. Oh, job email is different than text messages. Like, kids will learn that when they get their first job and realize they can't address their coworkers and boss the same way. And, like, there's a culture that evolves around that. And, you know, for better or for worse, we all learn how to write work emails. And having computers help out with that, you know, maybe we'll just smooth that curve a little bit.
Yeah, please advise.
Right. So the language stuff is in Mail Notes, Safari Pages, Keynote, and third-party apps, as John had mentioned. Then we get to images. I don't know why I wrote down photos, emojis, and GIFs, but apparently that was mentioned. You get like a Bitmoji-style generated images of people.
Well, it's more like a Memoji, isn't it? Doesn't it look kind of like their Memoji
style? Sort of, but then you've got like the backgrounds and they're not interactive, but they're like holding things, which is more Bitmoji. I don't know. I mean, it's one way or the other.
But yeah, no, it can what it's saying is you have pictures of people in your contacts, in your photos collection that it has identified using the People and Places feature. You can ask it to draw you a cartoony picture of that person, which is brave.
Right. It is.
Yes.
Because
it is. That's a bold move.
Cartoony pictures of people can go wrong in many, many ways. And this is an Apple feature, not an OpenAI feature, which we'll get to in a little bit. This is an Apple feature. So if Apple hoses this, there's going to be press about it. There's a lot of ways this can go wrong, right?
I bet they've been very careful with certain things.
I mean,
don't make my nose too big or whatever. Like, I bet there's a lot of that kind of stuff in there.
First of all, they don't want to make it something unflattering because people don't want to see an unflattering picture of themselves. And second, I think it's got the same problem that I always complain about Memoji is that unlike the Miis and Nintendo, Memoji all have little pumpkin heads. And my head's not a pumpkin. It's a football, right? Like... like they just regularize everybody into like, you know, like the little people from play school or whatever. Like everyone looks like a doll, and then you don't see yourself in that. You're like, you have not captured my likeness. That doesn't look like me, right? This seems like it's going to try to capture people's likenesses so that when you paste it into a chat or whatever, or generate it in whatever way, people go, oh, that's Timmy. I recognize his face. It's not just because Timmy has brown hair, and it's just a round pumpkin head with brown hair on it. So. This is the first sort of like potential danger zone of the features they've got. Because all the other ones, like text summarization, helping you with writing, changing the sentiment nicer, this has the potential to go wrong. But anyway, it's part of their image generation framework. It can make people for you.
Indeed. And you can do it as sketches, illustrations, or animations. And it's built into the system apps. Then another capability, action. Basically what they were saying is you can say, I think to Siri was the implication.
Yeah, this is such a weird structure of the thing. We've talked about it before of like, how are they going to talk about the OS without talking about AI features? And the fact is they didn't. They talked about AI features. They just didn't call them AI. How are they going to talk about Siri when they haven't introduced Siri yet? They just talked about it and they just didn't mention Siri. Like later they're going to mention Siri. Normally they have a way to arrange it so they can talk about what they want about it. Here they couldn't avoid it. They had to talk about things that they hadn't quote unquote talked about yet. And this is one. Yes, you're asking Siri.
So the examples they gave, you know, pull up the files that Jaws shared with me last week, or show me all the photos with Declan and Michaela and Aaron and me, or show me the podcast that my wife sent last week. I was happy to hear that.
I can't do that.
Well, fair. my point is just that I'm always pleased when Apple acknowledges that podcasts are a thing. I think these make a lot of sense. I think this is the sort of thing we want to see from Siri, is making it more useful. They also said a lot about personal context, and they started to flirt a little bit with like Rewind AI and Recall that Microsoft has been embroiled over. But they said that there is an awareness of what's on the screen.
They didn't say that. They showed things that said, hey, when you're on the screen, that's the context. And so when you say something like, oh, send this to whatever, or like, I'm assuming it's not OCRing the screen and scraping the info. I'm assuming this is all like user activity APIs and Apple's apps that have integration.
I don't know if that's true. I don't think that's exclusively true, because one of the examples they showed was at some point, it might not have been at this part of the presentation, but like somebody sent their address in a text message thread, right? Mm-hmm. So like you and I are exchanging messages. You send me your mailing address and they said to Siri, you know, add that address to his contact or something along those lines.
But Siri has full access to messages, right?
True.
It's Apple's own app. Like, but yeah. If that was WhatsApp, what would it have done?
I see your point. Yeah, I'm not sure. That's a good point.
Honestly, I think like because of the way they're doing this, I would have no problem with it screen scraping and OCRing it, because I know that it is just getting the information it wants. It's sending it to a server that doesn't log it, that has no ability to store things, and it throws it away.
Right.
That's
better. It is also probably just using the accessibility APIs. Like, it's probably already
There are lots of, like I said, there's NS user activity, or not NS, but there's user activity API. There's the other various ways where this information is exposed to the OS, to the frameworks that you're using, because you're not, you know, you're using the UI frameworks. There's lots of ways they can do this. And that is the advantage they have as the platform vendor. And being context aware in this way is great, because when they said about context, like, oh, how are we providing context? You're providing context by just using your phone. Whatever you're doing on your phone, that is the context. And then you activate the new Siri, which we'll see in a little bit. And you don't have to do anything to provide the context. It's already there. And the OS sort of extracts that from what you're doing and what you have done, right? Because the OS knows all that and uses that to hopefully get a more useful answer out of the LLM.
So I talked about architecture. I feel like maybe we should try to breeze through this as quickly as possible. But basically, they made a whole speech about how, you know, privacy is important. And of course, they cited that on-device processing is where they're doing most of this, which leads us to Apple Intelligence being Apple Silicon only, apparently A17 Pro and above. They talked about how there's different models. There's LLMs and diffusion models. They have an on-device semantic index, the software image. They made a lot of they talked a lot about how their images, which they meant both for the iPhone and for their servers, which we're going to get to in 2 seconds, are independently verifiable. And I'm not entirely clear how or why.
They're saying is, like, you know how security researchers can find flaws in iOS because they have iOS?
Right.
That's the same thing. Whereas if you've run servers, there was no reason for you to give them what's there. Mm-hmm. Now, anyone listening to this who's not an Apple fan was like, why don't they just give them the source code? That's yet the Apple way. But honestly, analyzing a compiled binary is much harder than analyzing the source code. But that's the way it is.
So they talk about private cloud compute, which basically the short of it is they try to do everything on device when they can, including a lot of the image generation. I think they had said at one point that they do that on device. But there is an awareness that, oh, this is not going to work on device. I got to send this to something with more compute power. And so they're using servers that are in turn using Apple Silicon that draws on the security properties of Swift, among other things, which I'm not entirely clear what that
means. It does mean, like, memory safety and stuff. Like, this private cloud compute finally makes sense, as a sense of the rumor we talked about in a past episode about using Apple Silicon and servers. Finally makes sense, right? Yep. Not because of the secure enclave. It's because this is stuff they would run on device. They're just farming it out. And if you're going to farm it out, you have to farm it out to, you don't have to, but it's much easier to farm it out to the same architecture. I would run it on Apple Silicon, but it would burn your CPU, or you don't have enough RAM. Well, guess what? Apple makes bigger Apple Silicon chips. Finally, it's like, why would they use the M2 Ultra? This is why. Yep. It's Apple Silicon. It is, think of it as just an outboard giant processor for your phone that you call upon briefly to do a thing and get the answer back. I feel so much better. I'm like, why are they doing this? Why are they making the server? And so, and they'll give you the image of the thing that's running on that server, and they'll do a cryptographic thing where, you know, you can prove that iOS won't talk to it unless it's been... The one piece they didn't mention is, like, there's got to be a third party involved in here. Otherwise, we're just taking Apple's word for it that will only let you use the published ones. But they're bending over backwards. Like, they're going almost as far enough to give you the source code to it. It's saying, we're going to do outboard processing, but we don't want any of your data. These things can't log. They have no storage subsystem. They're running like a version of Apple's operating system that takes those parts of the operating system out. There's no support for persistent storage. There's no file system. it's just so you see this a lot in, you know, cloud computing, where they'll have servers that can't log, that don't save any information. This is what they're doing because they don't want this information. It's cheaper for them not to have it, and they are really, really going to great lengths to try to make it so that an outside observer could say, yes, they're honestly not saving my stuff, but they do want to be able to do things faster than they can on your phone, or with more RAM than they can on your phone. This is a very clever solution. I'm much more optimistic about it now than I was before.
Yeah, and the other thing that I think worth mentioning is Marco alluded to a quasi-talk show that we went to, and then we ignored it after that. But what we had done was, during the State of the Union, actually, they had iJustine interview John Gianandrea, I think was the pronunciation. And
Tim Cook just called him JG.
That's what everyone calls him.
Yeah, John Gianandrea.
But anyways, they had a conversation, and it was like half an hour long, and it was mostly softballs, and mostly it appeared to be, you know, prepared both remarks and questions. But one of the things that Justine had asked was, well, you never really talked about the environment. And this all comes back together because I forget who it was, but one of them said, look, all of our chips began life as iPhone chips, where power is incredibly important. And so if we're going to do all this cloud computing, why wouldn't we try to do it on something that sips power rather than slurps power? And so here again, like you were saying, John, this also helps me grok and understand why they're doing all this with Apple Silicon.
And they emphasize, oh, and by the way, all data centers run on 100% renewable energy. Anyway.
Yep, exactly right. So anyway, so experiences. Now we get to Siri. So Siri apparently serves 1.5 billion requests per day, and it was introduced 13 years ago. I think that was my first WWDC then, because that would make it 2011, wouldn't it? It doesn't matter.
But it was introduced in 2011, okay. But yeah, my first was 2009.
I think I was 11, and that was your first as well, right, John? Sorry, I'm looking at John and pointing, which is not helpful for the for listeners. We don't do this in person often. So anyways, it's more natural, relevant, and personal. It has a whole new look. It's like a glowing like rim light and rainbow animation.
It's a cool
animation.
Look. I also like how there's like a little bit of an indentation animation where the button is, where you're squeezing. It's kind of this cool.
We were talking about in the pundit world. Are they going to rename Siri? Because the old one has such bad PR. Like, it's so dumb. Everyone hates Siri. Maybe they'll call it Siri X or Siri 10 or something like that. Not that they would rename it, but rebrand it. Siri AI, another possibility, right? And then people are like, oh, no, they'll just keep this name the same. They'll tell us really this time it's good, right? They did something that I hadn't heard anyone predict, which is, you know, keep the name the same, which a lot of people did say that they would do. But they essentially totally rebranded Siri. The icon is different. The user interface is different. How it manifests in the OS is different. You would be forgiven for thinking that Siri is gone and has been replaced with something new. I didn't think they would change the icon like that. Iconic like Siri look with the wavy thing, gone. Mm-hmm. Now there's a colorful infinity symbol thing or whatever. The icon's out of the menu bar. Like everything about this is rebranded, except it's still Siri. But like this is really trying to let people know this is. You may have been annoyed with Siri, and we didn't change the name, but this is better.
But everything is better, yep. So they made a big point about how it will understand you even if you stumble over your words, which I use Siri most when I'm in the car because I'm using it with CarPlay, and I'm responding to text messages or whatever the case may be. I don't know what my problem is. I literally talk for a living. That is literally my vocation. And yet I am constantly stumbling over my own words. And so hopefully that'll get a lot better. It maintains the conversational context. And they gave examples that you would expect. I can't recall any of them right now, but it was what you would expect. You know, so do this and then, okay, what about? Or, you know, you're taking several steps in a row.
Because context window is a natural part of LLMs. And fits well with that.
There's type to Siri. So you can double tap on the bottom of the screen and then you can type kind of. Sort of like a chat bot, which I think there's a type
you can,
of Siri
you can type
already,
to Siri now, right. But they're just exposing it more broadly because a lot of the time the barrier to using Siri is I don't want to talk out loud right now. In whatever context I'm in, I don't want to or can't. And so this gives it a more prominent option to something you could do before, but most people probably didn't know how to access.
They're giving Siri a lot of product knowledge, which
what
I was
products?
Like, I'm
what
sorry,
products,
what? So they said, you know, you can ask Siri, how do I scan a QR code? And once it processes and realizes what you're asking, it will show like a little help thing at the top of the screen saying, step one, do this, step two, do that, step three, do this, which I thought was phenomenal. And, you know, another example they gave very quickly is how do I write a message now and schedule it to send later? And so it will tell you, it will teach you how to do that, which I thought was very cool.
Although they didn't go through with that. It's like, do those instructions stay on the screen? How can you access the UI when they're there? But it's better than nothing. But yeah, to be clear, they didn't say this explicitly. I'm assuming it's only Apple products. You know, like, how do I fix my refrigerator? Right. Like, they're not on board for that. But I will definitely use this because very often I want to Google for something and find like a text bag. Like, how deep does it go? Can I ask it what the resolution was on like the second iPad or something? You know, like, I mean, Apple has this info. It's great that they're exposing it. Maybe it's mostly useful for to tech podcasters, but I'm looking forward to it.
It's just a KBase index at this point.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but by all means, make it's like a better search engine for information that's already on Apple's website somewhere that you'll never find.
Unfortunately, John, I don't think it will prepare the way for you, so I wouldn't try that. There's in-app actions, so add this photo to the email I drafted to Steve, or show me photos of Stacy in New York wearing her pink coat. Like that example in particular, I find that one of the things I miss so deeply about Google Photos, which was also not perfect, but at the time that I abandoned it a couple of years ago, was pretty darn good, was being able to search for something with natural language. And Apple has supported this for the last couple of years, but it's not great.
Yeah, they had a fixed set of words and phrases that you could use, and if it wasn't on there, you're, you know, I I remember, like, I have an app on my phone called Queryable, and I showed this to an Apple person at one point, and I said, well, I use this third-party app to search photos. And they're like, why don't you just use the photo search? Because you can just type things or whatever. And I showed them an example, and it was like ripped blue T-shirt or some phrase like that. Queryable, a third-party app that has to grind over and index all your things, but that uses type and LLM type thing. Like, look, it found it instantly. And you know the photos didn't have ripped blue T-shirt as any one of the keywords, so you would never find it. And finally, Apple has caught up with that and saying, yes, you just type what you want to find. We'll do our best to find it. We're not confining you to keywords. Powered by modern technology. I'm very happy to see this.
Me too. I hope it works really well, because this is one of those things, and this is what, to bring it full circle, what I was talking about earlier, and not to say that you guys disagree at all, but this is what I want to see. Like, take something that is friggin' painful in my life. Like, I know that I took a picture of me and Marco on the Nürburgring, and I know that it was sometime in 2013, and yes, I could, like, drill in via map, but I forget where the Nürburgring
and
is.
You're scrolling,
in
you find the month, there's so many photos there, and you go past it because it's just one picture.
Right? Yeah, it's so frustrating. This is the moment that I want the adults in the room to fix that problem. And as far as we know so far, they're fixing it. So I'm here for it. They also said you can do something like, say, make this photo pop. And I guess it increases saturation or something along those lines.
They have funny ways for you to hit a button in the UI. Yeah. Okay, sure.
Significant enhancements to app intents. And this was kind of hinted at or obliquely mentioned many, many, many times. But basically, the app intent system, and Marco, I'm happy for you to jump in whenever you're ready. But the app intent system is powering a lot of what Siri is doing, which is exactly, I think, what Marco, you had predicted.
Yeah,
you know,
what I've been hoping for. Because it's a way for apps to expose different actions, like, you know, play a podcast, you know, send email or whatever, to the shortcut system so far. And that's great for shortcuts users, but there's not that many shortcuts users. So this is like what they're doing is expanding the system and basically adding it to the semantic index, so that way at some point rolling out slowly over the next year or so, you know, Siri will first be able to access those app intents and start doing actions like, you know, give me a list of all the podcasts in Overcast that they never set up a shortcut for, that it can use the app intent system with AI approaches and, you know, linguistic analysis to look at the descriptions and actions and kind of try to figure out what you actually meant and then actually do that in those apps. What they showed today is the early foundations of that, that it's going to be a while before we can actually really do that. And a lot of this stuff is kind of hand wavy as like, soon this will be available or later in the year or next year. But this is good. This is exactly what I was hoping to see. This is a great first step.
Yep, couldn't agree more. They also gave another great example. Siri, when's my mom's flight landing? And it was pulling together not only the email that has her flight number, but also what is the actual arrival time for that flight. And again, this is smart, useful ways to solve problems for people.
I have a question about that, though. A lot of the examples they were showing were like, oh, and we pulled this from your email or whatever. And they did show the superhuman email app at one point, but like my question is, I don't use the mail app. Does it have no access to my email because it's from Google? I understand it's a third-party integration problem. Google's not going to want to share that with you. Google already does a lot of these things. Google will read my emails, knows where my flights are, gives me summaries, and so on and so forth. But it seems like because I use Gmail, nothing in my email will be exposed to Siri, which will make it less useful for me. And that is actually a problem for Apple because a lot of people do use third-party mail clients. And I hope Apple at least comes up with a way to integrate with Siri, you know, for third-party email apps that then Google can ignore for 3 years like they did with, like, what was it? The multitasking in iOS. What was the feature they didn't add to iOS for ages?
For the iPad, right? Yeah, I mean, probably all part of the Spotlight APIs. I don't know to what degree – I don't know if we know yet, like, through documentation and everything, to what degree the existing Spotlight APIs are being used to feed the semantic index from third-party apps. I don't think we know that. But that is the way to do it. And so that's probably one of those other areas that we'll also see, like, over time, we're going to probably see them start, you know, making these APIs slowly more integrated, more public with the semantic index and allow third-party apps to add data to it. You know, whether the app will is a very different question.
Hey, Google is not motivated to do this. I mean, Google has no Spotlight support. Google has its own search, which is very good. But it's kind of a shame that the usefulness of Siri depends highly on having access to things like your email that it just may not have access to if you don't use Apple Mail.
So they said it's a new era for Siri. Then you can enhance your writing. We spoke about most of this already, but there's smart reply in mail. And what I thought was interesting was if I write to the boys, you know, hey, when are you going to San Jose? What is your flight number? When are you getting in, et cetera, et cetera. So I have like a list of questions, right? What they had was like a wizard sort of interface where you would just say, okay, my flight number is 1234. I get in on Sunday and I'll be in at 5 PM or whatever. And then it would based on my answer, their answers, I guess it would draft an email that would say, you know, hey, I'm getting in at such and such a time and blah, blah, blah. And I thought that was very neat.
Yeah. I mean, and people are like, oh, don't you want to write that email yourself? This, especially on a phone, this is like, if you're on the go, time to tap out an email, but you just want to say, yes, I'll be there. And I'll be there at 8 or no, I'm not coming. And you don't want to have to type out that email. This is a useful feature. Like it's, you know, you called it a wizard using the Microsoft terminology. It's turning what would be a typing exercise into a button pressing exercise. And when you're on the go, especially like on the watch, I don't know if this is exposed on the watch, but even on the phone, sometimes you don't want to sit there and grab your phone with two hands and type, type, type or whatever. I give this a feature a big thumbs up.
Yeah. Mail previews and mail. So what I was going to say is previews and mail now summaries, but what does that even mean? So when you're looking at your inbox, for example, and you'll see the first two or three, you know, lines of text from that email. Oftentimes that's like a, hey, how's it going? Hey, you know, we spoke about this. Well, now what that's going to show is a summary of the email. Two very big thumbs up for me. If that's what's happening or if it works well, I guess I should say. And it also will bubble up priority messages. Same thing with notifications, priority at the top, you'll get summaries, etc. They specifically enumerated, you know, oh, if the group chat is popping off, you'll get a summary of it, which is great. Focus has a reduce interruptions mode. And, you know, they showed a screenshot of like maybe important. And I think it was like a ride share or something like that. I forget exactly what it was. They had a section about expressing yourself. And they talked about Genmoji. So what you can do is you can type a T-Rex wearing a tuxedo on a surfboard. And then you'll get an emoji looking thing of a T-Rex wearing a tuxedo on a surfboard.
If this works, that's really cool. It's basically an emoji generator that generates... It generates new art in the style of Apple's emoji, which is great.
This is a clever idea to choose to do this particular feature because the images generated are low resolution.
That's true.
That's faster to generate.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
They picked very tiny images. Because very often those AI image generators will make you a thumbnail first. And if you really like it, it'll do the longer processing for the bigger thing. But these are all fast and presumably on device. And presumably trained on Apple's own emoji. That was one of the questions, by the way, that I Justine asked. They said, and you may be wondering, listening to this, is where they asked Apple, what did you use to train all your AI models, right? And their answer was not great. I was hoping they would have touted in the thing. And by the way, everything we train these with is information that we own. But what they said instead was, we trained it on, you know, publicly available information on the web, yada yada. Like they didn't have a story kind of like Adobe or whatever of like, look, we paid for our own all the information we train this on. It's not on any of your user data. It's just on like stock photos that we bought or licensed. We licensed things from New York Times. They didn't say that. They trained it on publicly available information. So Apple is not currently entirely, you know, immune to whatever the fallout is of the legal ramifications of training AI stuff.
Yep. So they have an image playground, which... This is where we're starting to, you know, jump the shark a little bit, but it could be cool. So what this is it's in line, or I believe they said in a dedicated app, and you can create playful images. There are themes, costumes, accessories, places, and more. It all happens on device, and you can use different styles, like we mentioned before, animation, sketch, or illustration. There are suggestions related to personal context. You can do this, I think, in many different places. And this is creating like a, what was the image generator thing? You just said it a second ago, the Stable Diffusion. It's giving like a Stable Diffusion style image.
This is 2024 clip art.
Yeah, actually.
They really showed it being used as clip art. You need an image of something. Now you can just describe what it is. Or if you did a sketch of something, they showed someone like drew like an outline of something. You can just say, take this and make it into a picture. And they even showed, hey, maybe you didn't provide an illustration. Maybe you wrote a note or a document and you just circle the blank area next to it and it says, make me an image. And it will look at the text and figure based on that text, here's what the image should be. I presume that this was trained only on known licensed images because this is a big danger zone. But if they train it only on, like, if there's no porn in there, right, it's not going to generate those type of things, right? It seems very constrained, and it's just the interface is wacky and weird and really,
yes,
maybe It's like a glowing blob and these things floating around it. I'm not sure that's the right choice for this feature. But anyway, if you need to generate AI-looking stock art that everyone will know was AI-generated, you can use this feature to do it. It's available to third parties. It's available as a dedicated app. It appears in lots of places. It's blobby and weird. And I think this is the most sort of out there feature they decided to add that is of questionable utility, of questionable legality, based on what they've told us. And I think all the stuff that it generates is kind of recognizable as having been generated. But, you know, it's better than, I guess, doing what other people, what people did before features like this, which is that you just Google. You just type what you wanted in Google, you make it an image search, you grab some image you found on the web, you yank in and put it in your thing, and this is probably better than that.
Yep. They mentioned a few other things. Photo editing, they have a cleanup tool, magic eraser style thing. Searching using natural language, which we talked about. The memory movies, which I actually really enjoy those. They're clearly a very naive implementation, but they're fun, and I guess they're going to get a lot better. Or you could even type a description, and it'll assemble the movie for you. They even said including chapters. I'm not sure if they literally mean chapters or if they mean like different phases.
A title card or whatever. And by the way, the way the third-party thing of like scribbling over an image or whatever, that's their magic wand tool. It's part of like Pencil Kit. The little pencil thing that you see lets you pick like a highlighter, a pencil, a pen, or whatever. Now you have a new tool, which is like a magician's magic wand. And that's the thing you use in any document where you're using Pencil Kit and that thing appears. You can just grab the magic wand and circle something that you drew and it will make an image out of it.
Yep. And then Craig comes back to say that Notes will record and transcribe audio. And then I believe he said you can also do this on a phone call.
Yes.
And part of that is that it will notify you. They didn't explain how, but notify you. And the other party, I should make it clear, they will notify both parties that the recording has started, and that will be part of the phone call, and then it will record and transcribe it.
Yeah, and summarize it afterwards.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So all, you know, common, you know, voice meeting features.
Mm-hmm. And then all this is available for free on new OSs. Then they talked about, hey, what if you need to do something more, like something more intense that requires more general knowledge, et cetera, et cetera. So we've partnered with ChatGPT and GPT-4.0, and Siri can leverage ChatGPT. And what we've talked about, and we are not the only ones, is, well, how does Apple make it clear that if this gets gross or weird or whatever, that's not on us. That's them over there. That's the weird. That's the double popped collar weirdos over there. Don't blame us. And so what happens is, as you're using Siri, it will say, hey, I forget exactly how it's verbalized, but basically, you know, I can't do this. ChatGPT
I can't do this.
Like, well, right. Exactly.
That's the thing about this feature. We're like, how is this going to manifest? How are they going to present it? The fact is they don't have anything like this. Mm-hmm. Now, if they did have something like this, how would they use it? We don't know. Because they don't have anything like this. But basically, you talk to Siri, and I'm sure it doesn't say, I can't do this. What it does is helpfully offer, hey, do you want me to send this to ChatGPT? Mm-hmm. As if people know what the hell ChatGPT is.
And they do. Right. People know.
And you could say yes, or you can say no. And if you say yes, it will do it, and it will bring it back. And they're really sort of isolating it to lay the blame. And I was kind of surprised when they said, and by the way, this may work with other things besides ChatGPT in the future. They even named Google Gemini. They said, you know, Google Gemini, we were talking with them and the rumors that you read. No, they didn't say this, but they said, hey, we may integrate with other third party large language models. What they didn't say is we're also internally working to make our model as good as theirs so we can use it. They do have their own models. They're using it. Everything we've talked about so far is Apple's own models running on Apple's own servers on Apple's own device. And they emphasize this in the keynote. That's just to be clear, everything you've seen, it's us. It's all us as privacy preserving. But then they didn't say this. We don't have this. There's a thing we don't have that we know people are interested in, and we wanted to provide access to it. And the way they're doing it is sometimes when you talk to Siri, it suggests that you talk to somebody else.
Yep. And so it will go to ChatGPT. This will do composition, image generation, no account required. It's free. There's nothing logged. ChatGPT subscribers can optionally connect their account to get more paid features, et cetera, et cetera. They said you're in control of when ChatGPT is used. It's coming later this year, and support for other AI models in the future. And so basically, that's AI for the rest of us, as they said. iPhone 15 Pro and iPad and Mac with M1 or later. U.S. English this summer. Everyone else pound sand for the time being.
And iPad M1 and later, too.
Sorry, yes.
Yeah. This is pretty great. I mean, I think we need to wrap up because we're running along here. I'm very happy with what they've announced today. I think it is exactly the kind of thing we would expect from Apple, like, and kind of at the top of what we would expect from Apple. Like, it's not underwhelming. It's not, there's no like major limitations or compromises that we can see yet. I think it just looks like a really solid set of updates, and I like that, you know, where they're going with their AI features does seem to be exactly in line with both what we would expect from Apple and what we would hope from Apple. So overall, you know, we'll see over the coming months as we dive into the APIs and see what the limitations are, and then as we actually get to use these betas, like, we'll see kind of where the rough edges still are, what features aren't there yet. But overall, like, as a way for them to have set the direction, I'm very happy with what this is.
Yeah, I mean, all these things are still subject to, okay, well, we have to actually try to use them, because the things they describe are great until we see what answers they give them. But with these sort of AI LLM things, that's the big question. Like, will it do a good job? We like how it's set up. We like, as I said, the architecture and their private clouds and the privacy preserving, and we like how it integrates, and we like everything about it. But the bottom line is, you're going to get a result. Is the result useful? Does it get it wrong? Like, this has always been the problem with Siri. Siri ostensibly can do a bunch of things, but often you ask it to do them and it can't do them. Will it be consistent more than Siri is? Will it be faster? Like, these are all things that we'll find out when we start running the betas and see how it works out. But the architecture and the arrangement and the selection of features they've laid out all look good. It's just a question of execution now, and we hope they do that well.
All right. Thank you to our sponsors this week, Trade Coffee and Delete Me. And thank you especially to our members. You support us directly. We are so thankful for that. You can join atp.fm/join. What are we doing for overtime this week?
I think we're going to be talking about the Apple Park WWDC experience, which I'm very excited to talk about. John ate pizza at Apple Park, y'all, and I'm going to guess that he has thoughts. So or is that going to be after show, actually?
After show.
Okay, all so, right. Well, there's other things. I'm sorry, I got ahead of myself. I'm just excited. But the everything except maybe the food will be in overtime. We'll give everyone the food stuff in just a moment.
So overtime is our member-exclusive segment. You can join and listen, atp.fm/join. Thank you so much, everyone, and we'll talk to you next week.
So, John. How was the WWDC food?
So we used to talk about the WWDC box lunches because they would be in like big convention centers, and the convention centers very often have contracts that require Apple to use their vendor for food that you serve people. So they had to use those vendors, and that food was often exciting and surprising and unexpected and soggy and strange and just the source of lots of conversations. This was my first WWDC at Apple Park, even though they've done it here for a couple of years. It was Casey's first as well.
Mm-hmm.
They did not have box lunches. Apple is not required to use some weird vendor for their food. In fact, they can do whatever they want. It's their food. It's in Apple Park. And I have to say, not that this is a high bar, but this was the best WWDC food I have ever had. Not even close. It's nothing like the box lunches you see. It was better than most catered food at any kind of office conference thing you're going to see. It was interesting. It was executed pretty well. They didn't have many items that were ill-advised. Like an ice cream sundae, and they leave it out in the sun for an hour. Like, there's some food items that will work better in a context where you have to put out large volumes of it out for people. Now, I will say that I was with the media people in a smaller area. I don't know if the attendees got different food than we did, but the media area had maybe 100 or 200 people versus 5,000 attendees.
Well, no, it's not 5,000 anymore, right?
No, I think it's like 1,500 or something.
I don't know. It seems like a lot. But anyway, there's a lot more. And so maybe the food was different down there. But yeah, they had a selection. I don't even think they called it pizza. I think they called it like focaccia with tomato sauce and cheese on top with basil. And that's what it was. Yeah. And I have to say,
yeah, it was not pizza.
It didn't. I mean, it looked like it was pretending to be Sicilian pizza. But what it tasted like was focaccia with tomato sauce, mozzarella. But it was, for what it was, I give it a thumbs up.
Wow.
It didn't taste like pizza, but it tastes like a good food item that I want to eat. Right? And that's what it's got to do. And they had the little thing with like the pork belly on a cornbread thing
that
with
was
a
really
jalapeno.
Good too.
Yeah. Whatever the hell that was. I'm like, thumbs up on that too.
And yeah, because it was like a slab of thick cut bacon, basically, because that's what pork belly basically is, or vice versa. And a little piece of cornbread, like a little sliver of jalapeno. That was really good. They had some sort of fish like sandwich thing.
Yeah, I didn't bring the fish.
You know, I wouldn't go for the fish.
It was really good. It was actually really, really
went
good.
Back for seconds. You got a second one of those.
And actually, breakfast was really good too, come to think of it. They had little sandwiches.
Yeah, I had a great overnight oats thing at breakfast.
I didn't have that, but they had little breakfast sandwiches that were like egg and bacon or whatever. Those were really good.
Yeah, they had those little mini slices. Like, I got one with like eggplant on it and some other stuff, some pickled peppers and eggplant. Just, I mean, it wasn't, you know, it's not high cuisine, and you could tell some of it, you know, it's been out for a while, and some of the pickled peppers did soak into the, like, the kind of hot dog bunny type. But I'm not saying it's amazing, great food, but boy, so much better than those box lunches.
Night and day, so much better. So much better. There was something else that I saw you grab a little like cup of salad, and I'm really allergic to spinach, and so I'm always a little I love salad, but I'm always a little reluctant to, you know, brave that in this sort of scenario. But I looked, and they had the ingredients there because California, I guess. But hey, it worked out in my favor, and I had that, and it had all sorts of ingredients that I don't typically eat, but it was very, very tasty. So I enjoyed
They're called
that.
Vegetables.
Oh, stop! I have salads all the time. But yeah, the chocolate chip cookie, they had little packages.
Yeah, the chocolate chip cookie was pretty good.
Yeah.
Even the touchscreen coffee was actually pretty good.
I'm impressed.
They had one of those, like, you know, touchscreens where you push what you want and it just very slowly drips it out, this very fancy looking faucet. But even that was actually like okay, which I was not expecting it to be.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was very.
One complaint is they had water. Just, you know, water bottles there, and to try to be environmentally better, they didn't have plastic water bottles. They had like aluminum water bottles. The caps on those aluminum water bottles are so hard to get off. Way too hard.
I have one right here. It's fine.
Just the initial thing where you have to break the little things that are connecting. Okay, that's what I mean. Not once it's open, it's fine.
I got
you.
Yeah,
you gotta do some strength training on that. Your wrist action.
I know, but it's just. I mean, I got them open. It's not, but it was just, harder than it should have been. So there's one design problem with those bottles. But yeah, yeah. Again, the bar is low. You're not expecting much, but pleasantly surprised. You know, it's as you would expect, the Apple Park food. I'm sure people who work there, it's just like it's like work cafeteria food, but
well,
it is,
I think
it was better.
It said Cafe Max.
Oh yeah, no, it's all the same. That's what you get if you work there, but like right. It is having eaten at a lot of company cafeterias in my career. This is a step up from any place I've ever worked.
Yeah, have you ever been to any of the Cafe Max ever?
Yes.
Okay, so because we went like in 2017.
Always been very pleased with them. I've gone to a few here and there, like over different years and different buildings and mm-hmm. you know, different people giving us lunches and stuff. And it's always been good.
Yeah, I was very impressed with the food. It got two thumbs up for me. All right, titles quickly.
Perfect ending. All right, I think there was one really good one at the beginning. That's why I like computers. I think it's almost certainly got
to
be that.
I suggested it, but
I don't know the URL to the showbot.
caseless.com/showbot.
Yeah, that's why I like
www.caseless.com/showbot.
I do like Shades of Newton as well.
I liked My Head Is Not a Pumpkin, but I don't know if that's as good a WWDC episode title.
No, that's not as good.
I mean, that's why I like computers is very good.
I think that represents this very well.
All right. I literally have no show notes for today, for the record.
Great.
I'm sorry.
That's why I like computers. Good.
All right. Are you putting this in the robot or am I?
You are.
Oh, okay.
All right. Thank you, live people. We're going to cut you off now and do some overtime. We will talk to you next week.